Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our city council meeting, work session, May 14th, 2007. We have three items to discuss. We have three council members that we expect to come in later. Beverly may not be here tonight, but we expect the other two for sure. But they might be somewhat late getting here, so we'll just go on. The first item has to do with Parks and Recreation Tourism Master Plan. Second item, tennis courts. The third, outside city recreation fees. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We're going to kind of cover these all as a blanket because they are all part of Parks, Recreation, and Tourism. Glenn Parker's here to answer any and all questions, but the last item is something it's more for information because we're following what council has asked us to do. But if you'd like to discuss that, because I'm not too sure if we'll have time in the work session to do it, we certainly could add that to the agenda if there's some concerns. Otherwise, we would just move forward with this because this is the direction council gave us a number of years ago. The first item is, again, something that's left over from last year. You all approved this master plan. It's really an update of what we did about 15 years ago. It'll be looking out for the next 10 to 20 years as to what type of recreation should we be providing, what direction we should be going, and taking a look at certain trends that have been happening in the city. Again, as we've been growing with the city, our population per capita or per household has actually decreased. We were at about 2.6, we're down to about 2.1, which means that we have more two-member households and less children in a lot of these households. So it's that's going to drive some of that direction. We are giving you a recommendation based on what the Recreation Commission stated they thought we should have on this commission. This commission will be meeting, or committee will be meeting several times over the next 9 months to a year. They'll be holding several public meetings. In fact, our first public meeting we'd like to hold is at Smith Hazel on June 11th and then June 12th at the Week Center. And we have given you the makeup of what we'd like to have, and then we'd be going to each of these different organizations asking for a committee member. And so what we'd like to get tonight is your approval of this, or add some, take away some. They feel someone from the ATAX committee, someone from the baseball organization, equestrian, recreation program, and special events. That would be one person. Soccer, tennis, Aiken Arts Commission, basketball, Friends of Hopelands and Rye Patch, someone from the school district. So that would be K through 12th grade, softball, track and field, Aiken Recreation Commission, who will be chairing this committee, the Chamber of Commerce, higher education, which is Aiken Tech and USC Aiken, seniors, special needs population. We've been getting a lot of interest and requests from those that have some kind of needs, whether they're it's in a wheelchair type of situation or something more in a mental type of situation that they would like to see some recreation, and then a youth representative. It's somewhat of a large committee. It would give us about 18 people on this committee. We feel that it'll be a manageable committee because a lot of them will not always be able to attend, but it also gives us a lot of input from a lot of different people. So this is our recommendation to you, and Glenn is here to answer any questions you may have concerning that.
Roger, I just had one question as I was looking at the organization. How many, I think that since we have so many senior citizens in town and more coming every day, it seems like, how many seniors do you envision to be a part of this committee? I know the word is plural here, seniors.
But right now we're going to be asking someone from the senior organization specifically to be involved. But that doesn't, you know, it could be that the from one of our three committees could also be a senior that we also have.
Well, I think that's good. My concern is that we not have enough seniors. And if you have 18 people, what is enough? I don't know, but it seems like we ought to have maybe three seniors And what is a senior? Is that over 50, over 60?
Good question.
So that's my only concern. I like the organizations. I have no problem with that. But I do think they ought to be represented fairly, more than just one, maybe.
Okay.
I think that's my only comment, Roger, my personal comment.
When you say school district representation, you mean some of the coaches, things like that?
We didn't have anyone specific, like a coach or whatever, in mind. We thought we would go to the Area 1 administration and ask them to appoint somebody.
Why
so it could be Mr. Caver or, I don't know, I'm not sure who.
I think it'd be good to have some people involved with sports activities, though, don't you?
If we only have one, though, I'd be nervous about getting one from Aiken and maybe not South Aiken, because part of what we're going to look at this in this plan is the relationship with the schools and joint use of facilities long term.
Well, then maybe we need one from both schools.
We may. Mm-hmm. We may.
And it's not just the high schools, and you got the middle schools involved, and we are involved with them on several different levels, anywhere from track and field to softball to baseball to tennis. So basketball, we use their gyms a lot.
I was thinking that some of those coaches work, they start seventh grade on up in some of these sports. I don't know. I just think that would be a smart thing to do while we do the other age group as well.
Any other comments? Lynn, obviously you think this is a good representation of the committees?
Yes, sir. The Recreation Commission massaged it a little bit, but the company we're working with, Wooden Partners, they have a template, if you will, that they've used in the past that's worked pretty well, and we just adjusted a little bit, like the equestrian, to reflect Aiken a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, if there are no other comments, I guess we're finished with this.
And we'll take that back to the Recreation Commission, and they can start inviting folks from these different committees, because, again, we do want to get started soon on this, because it brings us into the next area, which is the tennis courts. As Council knows, we did receive money to finish up the four courts. We have 12 courts now, 6 hard courts and 6 clay courts. And the original plan for that center was to have 16 total courts. We have the money. We are putting together right now the utilization of those courts. And Glenn gave me some numbers earlier today. I've asked him to go back and to refine that, because the utilization that he's given me was counting every hour of every day throughout the winter, and I'm not too sure if it accurately reflects, especially the last few months when the courts were much fuller, the tennis center is now completed, a lot more activity is taking place out there, and so we're going to really look at this more in depth over the last few months. And what I'd like to recommend to you, because there's about 4 different ways that we go with this right now. One, we can go ahead and just say, let's go ahead and build 4 courts and make them of a certain type, clay, hard courts, or a combination thereof. Until we really get a little bit better utilization of what courts are being used at what times of the day, and we've had one court that's actually been out of service for several months, I guess up to maybe even 6 months, so that's reflecting obviously a very low utilization. We should be able to get that back in operation, Glenn, within the next few weeks.
Mark just talked to him earlier this week, and they said they'll be here no sooner than May 20th, but shortly after that.
Okay. What I'd like to recommend to Council is that you would consider taking the money that we have, having us hold that money until we get a better idea on the utilization, that some of this master planning could look at this more in depth as to what's happened there. They could talk to the tennis group that's out there. It's hard to say it's a group. It's the folks that participate in the various tennis programs and individuals, hear from the citizens, and then we could come back to, I think, with a little bit more of an intelligent idea as to what we feel is the needs of the community, but also have a much better idea what the utilization is, taking a look at, especially during good weather, and having that court number one utilized. Again, when I look at it, several months of utilization, but this includes the winter time, includes rain days. It really is just a broadcast of it. Courts, I think it was 5 and 6, Glenn, showed a utilization rate of over 75% during some of the peak hours. But again, that's taking into account some days that when no one was there because of the weather and other type of situations. So what I told Glenn today is my recommendation to you is that let us go back, let us look at these numbers a little bit more in depth, let the master plan go forward, but also recommend that we take that money and we put it in a standalone account so it is there available for the tennis center in the future to build whatever is necessary in the future.
Roger, excuse me. I want to make sure I understand what you're... Are you saying allow the master planning committee to look at this issue?
This would be part of that issue. They'll be looking at many issues throughout the city, but this is going to be specifically part of their process, is to look at those courts.
Okay.
Sorry, Mr. Mann.
Excuse me.
I apologize for being late, but I just got back into town. And I don't know who's in the audience, but are there individuals in the audience that came to speak on the tennis court?
Yeah, I was just going to ask if you would like to take a few minutes and speak.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't.
Is there one person that can speak for all of you, or two people? Sure. Okay. You can come on up if you'd like to speak.
First of all, I'm Mark Calvert. I'm the director of tennis for the city of Aiken. I did a little impromptu survey this past week. I have 146 signatures, and all I did was 4 clay, 4 hard, 2 clay, 2 hard, because I thought that was our 3 options. We had 1 person to vote for all hard. We have, I think, 22 people voted for 2 and 2, and roughly 120-something, and I have a copy of this for y'all. I'd like to say there is a need today for the courts. During prime times, we're turning people away. Most, 90% of everybody that's playing tennis there want to play on the clay courts, and that's my biggest problem that I have, is trying to adjust out is who plays here, who plays there. The numbers in RecWare, I don't care what facility you go to or anywhere in the country, like you said, we need to adjust those a little bit because nobody plays tennis in the middle of the day. Okay, we have a big crowd in the morning, big crowd in the afternoon, starting early afternoon and at night. So there's many days in the mornings, there's many days at night where we don't have enough courts and we're sending people away. They're going to the old courts to play. So the need is there right now. Okay.
How about the maintenance of the clay courts versus the hard courts? I know it's more expensive and more time consuming.
Right. The maintenance, we've had an issue with that. It's my understanding that in July, hopefully we're getting another maintenance person for the park. That's much needed. There is more maintenance. There's no question about that for the clay courts. But you said it yourself, Mr. Mayor, we're a retirement community, and that's what they want to put on the clay.
Now, y'all aren't retired, are you? Mark, thank you for your comments. Would someone else like to? Okay.
Hi, my name's Nina Maxwell.
Thank you.
And I play tennis at Odell Weeks. Thanks. And tennis for seniors is 50 on up. So that's your senior age on tennis. I have captained many teams at Odell Weeks, and most of my players want to play on clay. We had a ladies' morning league where we had to play on three clay and three hard courts, and some days it was hard to get the six courts. I played on some night leagues where we had three teams out of Odell Weeks. Two of us would be scheduled as home teams. We did not have enough courts. We need five courts for each team. That's 10 courts. Mark has two teaching courts that he uses at night sometimes. That's 12 courts. That doesn't leave any courts for anyone to play on and come in and play on for fun. So we were only allotted three courts for each team. So we had to, we start at 7 o'clock at night. That meant someone had to wait to play until 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, which gets quite late for us elderly seniors. Anyway, so we ran into that complication, and USTA is trying to, you know, increase our numbers here in the area, and with a lot of the influx of the people coming in, there's a lot of people that like to play tennis. And most of your seniors do want the clay courts. There is a lot more maintenance, but you have the courts in Charleston, which are at our city courts there. A lot of clay courts, and I don't know, maybe they have a bigger budget or something, but they they seem to handle it, you know. And I don't know. The other thing is, if you're looking at in the future, we'd like to get some of the USTA tournaments in here, and to do that, you have to have the courts. We now have the facility. We just hosted a ladies' tournament there this week from Monday through Thursday, and we've got wonderful comments about the facility, about how well the tournament went, how much they enjoyed the facility, and what a good job we did putting it on. And that was in part to Mark and to the people that you have working there at Odell Weeks, and it went very well. And the only thing we do, we have to fight all the time for the clay courts. We are ladies that play on Thursday. We have men that want to play on Thursday, and we fight with them all the time for who's going to get their reservation in time to get the clay courts. And we never, you know, so the ladies have kind of succumbed to the men. And we're hoping that you would see fit to give us four more clay courts, and I know they would be used. And any help we can have with that is...
Well, y'all would be willing to pay the difference, wouldn't you, between the hard court and the clay court? It's only $10,000 each. I like clay courts too. I can recall back in the early 50s playing at Fermata Club on their clay courts. And that was always fun.
I have a question. Are they still going to, if you want more clay courts, do you still want the self-watering kind? I mean, that seems to have been a problem with that particular court. And I don't know. I've just heard.
I thought the problem with that one was because the fertilizer got spread on the court by accident, or they didn't know what it was doing. That's what caused the mold, I'm not sure if I'm right on that.
I know. I hear stories too, and I don't know what's right and what's not right. So, I do have to say, I know this is not going to be popular with you all, but I do see a need as well for some hard courts. Having had, because the fact of the matter is that Aiken is a retirement community, but it is also a community of families, and our high schools have no facilities for these kids. There are six hard courts. They use them all if there is a tournament, which leaves nowhere for the other team to practice neither South Aiken nor Silver Bluff nor Aiken High have any tennis courts whatsoever. And I know that's not the city's responsibility, but we do have responsibilities to citizens of all ages. And I think that I want to see enough. I mean, those two courts that are up north of the skateboard park, those are
four.
Now, they are not included in this number that we're talking about tonight. But my feeling, too, is that I would love to see a lot more junior tournaments here in Aiken. And we don't have a spot. We have very few. We have very few. I mean, have one. Okay, but I'm just saying, that's great. I'm glad. But I will tell you this. I mean, I've had four kids that play tennis, and we have rarely, unless Mark is responsible for getting them together when we've had them. But the point is, we don't have enough courts. And I worry about that with our youngsters coming up playing tennis. Junior tournaments are on hard courts for the most part. Well, then we need to address that, because we don't have money in any budget for that.
6 months. We'll have the money available whenever we think we're ready.
They're there. They're playable. They don't maintain them either.
They don't.
If you'd like to speak, please come up to the mic so that we can get it on the,
well, the
on
thing
the record.
Is, they all need to be maintained of whatever sort we have. And I just want to be sure there are plenty so that people can do what they need to do of all ages. And I can see where you're coming from. Don't think that I don't. But I do think, it would be nice to know how many times, too, that we really can't get people on courts, you know. And I know that's going to be a problem.
Well, I think putting this in the hands of the master plan committee, and they can come to the city council with their recommendations at some point in time. And I was just talking to Roger about it. If it appears that there's enough information in 3 months or so, as Roger said earlier, let's give it a little bit more time and see the data that comes in. The council could act quicker, but if not, let the master plan committee take it, and then we'll deal with it when they bring it back to city council.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
Well, that would be summer of 2008, and I think that's too long to wait.
Yeah. Would it be too?
There's two ways of looking at it. You can go ahead and get better utilization numbers, which, like I said, what we got today, I really don't fully feel it reflects the amount of play that's out there, because in looking at the numbers that I received, it showed that the utilization, I'm not too sure where my numbers went to, but the utilization that we had out there was not near what we had anticipated, that during the hours of, let's say, 9 and 11, we had 49% in one court, 51% another, 73% another, 75%. And then it dropped down to 20%. And like I said, court number one has not been involved with this. We should get court number one back in operation within a couple of weeks. At that point, we could take a look at the utilization numbers, because especially early in the morning is when more of that summer play takes place.
That's right.
And we could either, A, come back to you in a few more months with better numbers that you can look at, or B, if we don't feel we still have those numbers, we could come back at the end of the master plan. If we wait till the master plan's over, it will be the summer of 2008.
That's too long.
What hours are you counting is the available hours?
From 8 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Yeah. And so your percentages are based on those hours.
And I got it by each court, courts 1 through 12, what it is at 8 o'clock, what it is at 9 o'clock, what it is at 10 o'clock.
See, to me, if you got six courts available, you take the real playable hours for those and then find out how many people play, if you will, rather. It's becoming overcomplicated, and there are hours when hardly anyone will play. In other words,
it's too hard.
And they're probably down for maintenance somewhere.
Now, again, taking just the hour of 10 o'clock in the morning, which is the most popular time, And the highest utilization that we had on any court was 78%. But again, this was during winter time, it was during rain events, and that's...
That's counting all of those hours of the day.
No, just at 10,
just at
10 in the morning.
Well, we need to move on here. It's after 7 now. We'll hear.
I'm Gerald Cobley, and I grew up in Aiken. I think the courts are great. I've played tennis all my life, but now I'm a senior citizen, and last week we had to play on the old courts for 3 days. We normally, it's about 15 in our group, and we play 3 days a week, and we never can play all 3 days on the clay court, so I think we need the 4 new clay courts now, not a year and a half from now.
And then the old courts are the ones north of the skateboard park.
That's old ones, and they got tracks all over them, and they are not good courts to play on. And for people our age, it's not good to play on the hard courts. The bad knees, and like I say, we never get to play on clay courts 3 mornings a week.
So your feeling is that if those courts were fixed up, that would be 10 hard courts altogether,
yes.
Am I correct?
That's right.
And then you said we could have 10 clay courts as well. But those would need to be repaired to have a comparable number.
They do, but I think we need to.
And they could be repaired. They've been repaired before.
Yes.
They've been in good shape before.
We couldn't play on the 12 courts last week at all. They were all full. Mm-hmm. So we had to play on the old courts. It's about 15 senior citizens in the group that I play with.
Right.
And we normally play on 2 courts. And like I say, at least one day a week we have to play on the hard courts. And so I think we need the 4 additional clay courts now, not a year and a half after the survey is going on. And people are not going to play in Aiken from 11 to 3 o'clock. So these times shouldn't even be considered. I think the times you need to consider is from 8 to 11, and from 4 to 9. You should just drop those middle day times off completely, because they're not going to play in the summertime at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need those courts now.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Krippner, you're the last. You're the last one here.
I'm a senior, and I don't play tennis. But I have noticed we watch tennis at our house all the time. And, you know, we've got some of the best baseball fields. We've got some of the best soccer fields. We've got some of the best of everything around here.
That's right.
And we've got golfers that are going to the pros and so on. We shouldn't have a second-rate tennis courts. And if you watch a lot of tennis, you'll find that the U.S. can't even compete because we don't have the clay courts to compete with the Europeans anymore. And I think we need the clay courts if we're going to start to breed good clay court tennis players.
Okay, so thank you very much. I suggest that we put this on the agenda in the next couple of weeks, and let's talk about it, and let's either pass it up or down when it comes to us on the agenda.
I agree.
We've got a lot of data here. We've got data, and I don't know. It's pretty overwhelming to me.
Mr. Mayor, this represents the people that are using the court right here.
Yeah. So I had no idea that the master plan would take that long when I said that.
And just again, so council knows, we have the money available to build the courts right now, whatever kind of courts you decide to build.
Do we have the money to fix up those other 4 hard courts as well?
Now, I do know that the 6 courts that are currently at this tennis center will be, the money is in the budget to overlay those, although they're only a few years old. When you initially build a court, it tends to settle, and so those are going to be overlaid this year, or this next fiscal year coming up. The old courts, the 4, we've got new fencing, new lighting going on. The overlay, I do not believe, is in the budget, though. And I don't know what shape they're in.
I
If I recall, I thought they were resurfaced maybe about 10 years ago.
But they said they were terrible to play on.
Excuse me, Mark.
What he just said.
So it's only been about 5 years ago then, less than 5 years ago. So they're in relatively good shape.
No, they're not.
They got cracks. Okay.
Who is they? Who's supposed to be maintaining all this?
They is us. They is Mr. Parker. The difference in cost for the maintenance of hard courts versus clay courts, there is a cost. It's about $5,000 a year more expensive to maintain a clay court than it is a hard court. When you take a looking over about a 10-year average, when you have to resurface it, etc., that's just the cost though, that is involved with the two. There's obviously a major advantage and benefit to it, but there is a cost to it.
Is the difference $5,000, or is what's
the difference? The difference. The difference is, again, there's almost no cost per year on a hard court except when you resurface it about every 7 to 8 years.
And what is that?
And I can't remember what Glenn gave me the numbers to resurface it. Now, we do have in the budget an extra person, and a good part of their time is going to be spent working on the clay courts in this budget coming up.
Just for the record, let's get this cost difference. Roger, it says $10,000 here per court. Cost difference between hard and clay.
That's to build them. That's to build them initially.
To build them?
Okay. The initial cost, it's higher to build a clay court than it is to build a hard court. About $5,000 a year to maintain them. Because there is an awful lot of maintenance. There's daily maintenance of every one of those courts.
Just so we'll all know what the numbers are.
And then with a clay court, you have to bring in, if you really do it right, you have to bring in material every year and resurface them with material on a regular basis. So.
Need daily labor.
So, but as the citizen said, there was a major push towards the clay courts, especially used by those that are having older knees and joints.
If it's only $1,000 a court, why can't we do the four on the north side too? I mean, that's
$1,000.
Did you not say that
no,
to 10. Resurface them? It's about
$2,000 or $3,000.
Resurface a hard court. You
about $2,000 or $3,000. And again, we could look at that when we do the other six hard courts. We could go ahead because once you get someone out here to do it, the cost per court goes down.
Be good. Yeah.
So when we come back with this on the agenda, we'll have all of those figures to look at before making our decision.
We'll have a little bit better utilization rate because we can look at it. Like I said, the numbers I had, and I think there might have been a misunderstanding, I was looking on a specific hour-by-hour basis, court-by-court basis. I could tell you what the utilization rate is on court one at 8 o'clock in the morning for the last 6 months, et cetera. Or what court five and court six is. If I looked at the total time at 10 o'clock in the morning for all the courts, I'd give you another number. But again, these numbers I think are skewed only because it covered the winter time, it covered rain times. I mean, so we should be able to get some better numbers next time we meet with council. In fact, the highest utilization time of the day is court number five at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It is 88%. Court number five, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock is 88%. I mean, it goes actually up in the afternoon for court number five. So but again, we have all the numbers. I think we just need to refine those numbers to be a little bit more meaningful. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
One more thing on the subject of tennis.
What?
The women of Woodside have told me what a great tournament it was. So.
This is new information.
Okay. Okay. Was anyone here specifically interested in the item 3, the increase in non-residential recreation fees? If not, what we're going to do is attach that on to the end of our agenda in case council wants to talk about that.
Okay.
Okay. All right. All right. Okay. Well, thank you. You tennis players, very much. Appreciate it.
The next meeting that this will probably be on the agenda would be June 11th.
Okay, we'll move into a regular city council meeting now. We thank you for being with us this evening, May 14th, 2007. And if you would please stand with us for a prayer and a pledge of allegiance.
Lord, we just thank you for having the privilege here to serve in this great city. You have truly blessed us in so many ways, with citizens who want to be involved and care for the city, for staff that work so hard day in and day out to give the services to those individuals on a block by block, person by person basis. And we're blessed, Lord, by leadership here in this community that guides and directs us every day as to the path that you'd want us to take. We ask that you be present this evening, guide, direct, give us clarity, Lord Jesus, and ask that, Lord, that you would just be present in all that we're involved with. We thank you and we praise you and ask this all in your name. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions to our agenda? We just mentioned this one. If you want to add that to the end of our agenda, the increase in non-residential recreation fees.
I'd like to talk about the underground wiring issue briefly, too, at the end of the agenda. That was in the issues and updates section of our...
Okay. All right.
That's all right.
Okay. Just put that under new business, I guess. Recreation fees and underground wiring. Underground wiring. Okay. Anything else?
Mr. Mayor, what about this and this letter we just got from the home builders? Well, number two.
Yeah, they're asking to delete an item. Okay, that's on the access management.
What is
the old business number? Which one is that?
Item number 4, an old business.
Okay. All right. They want to come and speak, and they weren't prepared. They weren't available this evening, so we can take that off and add it to the next agenda, if council agrees. Anything else?
We don't have any important project is coming up in the meantime that this is going to apply to, do we? I can't think of any myself, so it's fine.
You'd have to assume somebody would come in tomorrow. I mean, without us knowing that they're coming in.
Okay.
I mean,
there's nothing that we know.
Somebody could walk in off the street tomorrow with a brand new project that we're not aware of.
Oh, I know that. I'm just asking if there's something now that we know that's in that we know of that
Ed, do you know of anything?
Well, it won't come to us before next meeting. Can't.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of one.
Okay. Well, this will be two readings.
Ed, can you think of one that's even before this, while we got the ordinance coming up? Has there ever been a problem before? Has there ever been a problem, you know, causing us to discuss this matter? I mean, have you had a problem in the past with this?
Okay, if there's nothing else, then we're talking about deleting item 4 on the old business and adding two items under new business, registration fee, discussion, non-residents.
So we're tabling this till the next meeting? Or
Yeah.
If I could, Mr. Mayor, just to answer Councilmember Sprawl's, there have been a number of cases where council has always had to address, well, how many driveway cuts should we have in this one area? And this access management, depending on how council wants to approve it, but it says, you know, if they have 500 feet of frontage and such road, they could have one access or anything more than that. You could have two access and three access. It gives definite guidance to the planning staff and then to you as to how close should those driveway cuts be to certain curbs and corners and how many you should have per X number of feet of frontage. So it's,
I wonder if we're going to defer this now, and it's another thing that we've been working on and trying to get for a long time, if we could also defer consideration of any possible project that comes before us until the issue is resolved. In other words, we know it's pending. We apply it to whatever comes until we decide one way or another, or defer that project until we've made a decision.
Was the idea that it would help when people were making their plans, so we didn't get a plan that just was not going to work and they spent a lot of time on it and organized the parking lot and the whole nine yards, and then we said, oh, no, you can't do that.
Yeah,
I thought that's what it was about.
The State Highway Department has certain criteria for access management. Access management being how many openings do you have from that establishment, whether it be residential, commercial, business, onto a highway. Of course, not every road is in the state highway system. A good example would be Eastgate has become a pretty primary road. And a good example would be at some point in time, there's a rumor that Hilton is going to be building a garden hotel right behind the theaters. This access management would then tell you and tell our planning staff that they could have X number of access points onto it. Also, that there needs to be interconnection between their facility and another facility. And even talks a little bit about the width. It gives some good guidance. A large number of cities in South Carolina have this. This is something that council's talked about for some time now. We got a correspondence last week, I believe it was, Ed, from the Home Builders Association, and they asked for a copy of the plan, and Ed then sent them a copy of the plan. We had not heard from them until we received this letter. My understanding, though, is that it's not that they haven't they're questioning anything at this point in time, but they want to be able to have a little bit more time to review the plan to see if there's any concerns that they would have on their part with it before it becomes final reading before City Council. My understanding is also a number of them were involved in some kind of golf tournament today, and so they weren't able to be here tonight. So those are the two things. One, they said they just didn't have time, and two, they couldn't be here.
Is Dick's request possible? I mean,
why couldn't we just go ahead and do first reading tonight?
It's actually second reading.
This is second reading.
Yeah. You could actually pass it, and you could amend it depending on if they have any comments or not. I would rather you do that than try to pass some kind of a moratorium on building permits. You've never done that, to my knowledge, and it would be a...
I'd be happy to go ahead and prove it if that's what we can do.
Yeah.
Shame.
We have no idea the extent of that question.
Right.
No, they have brought up things like we really wanted to see how many curb cuts we could have on different types of roads, and is that something that we feel is a good mix or not? Again, they had more questions, and they really weren't specific because they had not been able to meet as a group yet to really thoroughly discuss it.
But it's been at the Planning Commission, right?
Oh, certainly.
And it's been around for quite a while. Why do we wait until it gets down to the...
When did they request information? When did we send it?
Ed, was that about Tuesday or Wednesday of last week? I was sick so often last week. I can't remember when I was here and when it wasn't.
At least 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, Ed?
I think so.
All right. Let's handle it tonight. And if we see something comes up, then we can amend it. 2 weeks is plenty of time, I think, for anybody to review it. And they had the Planning Commission to go to and the first reading of the ordinance to come speak. Not that we don't allow people to speak all the time. We do. So I don't feel bad at all about going ahead. We just got this in the mail, a couple hours ago? I don't know. Sarah got it. Sarah, when did you get it? Okay. We'll be happy to talk to them later, and if there's something that we think we need to change, we can go back and change it.
Mr. Mayor, maybe we could go ahead and act on this tonight, because it's going to be June before we meet again. Is that not right?
Yes, unless something special comes up.
Right, unless something special comes up. And, I think when a group wants to come before us to be heard, we should hear them. And even if we have to do that in a work session, and we have to, if this passes tonight and we have to amend it, then we can do that as well. But I think it would be a good idea to not go against what our attorney has said, and that is to think as if something is going to come up tomorrow.
Right. Okay, so we will not delete this on the agenda. We'll just have those two additions that we mentioned before. Okay? Do we have a motion and a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Further discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Pass this unanimously. Okay. First item is a presentation. We're very, very fortunate here this evening to have at least two gentlemen, I think. Come on up to the mic, if you would, to talk to us a couple minutes about the Aiken Highland Games and the Celtic Festival Day. Good to see y'all this evening.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight to inform you about the 6th annual Aiken Highland Games and Celtic Festival. We held at the JC Fairgrounds on Highway 1. It is a typical Scottish Games, including the athletic competition, which last year we had a world record set. The bagpipers will be here. We have world-renowned balladeer coming in from California, Alec Beaton. Celtic rock band coming down from Asheville, the Hooligans. Sounds like a great name for a rock band. So we would invite you all out. I've left some blue rack cards that have the pertinent information, and I hope all of you are able to attend. I know Jane's not able to, but if you're able to attend, we'd love to have you out there.
Yeah. Dick, would you identify yourself, please, and where you live?
I should have done that.
No, that's okay. And Ms.
I'm Dick DeWar. I'm the chair of this year's games, and this is Gordon Lewis, who was the chair of the games 2 years ago. Gordon is a past president of St. Andrew's Society of Aiken, which is the organization that is putting the games on.
Very good. We council has prepared a proclamation for this event, and I'd like to read it to you. Now, Leslie Price is not here yet. We were hoping she would get here in time to sign it.
And we'll keep it if it's okay with you, and until she can sign it. Maybe she'll come in, and then we'll get it to you.
That'd be wonderful.
But let me read it, if I may. Whereas May 19th celebrates the 2007 Nakin Highland Games and Celtic Festival, and whereas renowned for their courage and tenacity, Scottish Americans were among the brave pioneers who migrated west, even though the known and unknown hardships of such trips were quite frightening. And it is said that almost half of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were of Scottish descent. And whereas many Scottish Americans settled in the Carolinas, which including the city of Aiken has been the beneficiary of their Scottish traditions, heritage, and culture, and whereas the 6th annual Aiken Highland Games and Celtic Festival will attract thousands of visitors to our city, celebrating the unique cultural and traditions of the Scottish people while calling attention to their warm hospitality and natural beauty of the city of Aiken. And whereas the heavy athletic competition, Highland dancing, singing of balladeer Alex Beaton, performance of the Celtic band, the Hooligans, pipe band, border collie demonstration will enable spectators to experience firsthand some of the colorful and exciting traditions of the Scottish Highlander with Celtic food and clothing vendors, cultural and educational displays. The festival promises fun for all ages. Now, therefore, the City Council of the City of Aiken, South Carolina, does hereby acknowledge our Scottish Americans and proclaim Saturday, May 19th, 2007, as Aiken Highland Games and Celtic Festival Day, and urge our citizens to participate in the festivals in celebration of Scottish Americans. So thank you, gentlemen, very much.
And we're very grateful. Thank you very much.
I enjoyed going 2 years ago, I think. Not last year, but 2 years ago. And it's very exciting. It's my first time, as a matter of fact. I hate to admit that, but it was. And I think I learned that I was more Scottish than I was Irish. I forgot. It was one way or the other. I'll have to go back and find out again.
And you're right to point out that you were our honored guest 2 years ago, and I should point out that our honored guest this year is Scott Hunter, publisher of the Aiken Standard.
Very, very good. And I wish we had a camera tonight, too, because I'd like to get your legs in a picture.
I waited.
I had one, not knowing whether Tony was going to bring his. I had one, and I walked off with it. I wish I had it, but I'm sorry.
Other legs.
Dick and Gordon, thank you so much for being here with us, and we appreciate it. And we'll get this to you.
Thank you. We hope to see you Saturday.
Okay, sir.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Let's give him a hand.
Are those skirts made out of wool?
Yes. 100% very heavy wool.
Is this a biannual event then, Dick?
An annual event.
Yes. Wow.
Six major events. We do the Highland Games, and then in January we do the Birds' Night celebration. Those are our two major events.
Thanks again. Next item is the minutes, consideration of the minutes of the work session, the regular meeting of April 23rd, 2007, and the work session of May 7th, 2007. Any discussion? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
Not so moved, Mr. Mayor. Approve the minutes.
Second.
Okay. Show of hands. All in favor? Approval? Okay. Passes unanimously. Under old business, the first item is appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have three pending appointments. Two of them are presented for you tonight. Councilwoman Waters would like to reappoint Martin Buckley to the Building Codes Appeal Committee, and Councilmember Wells would like to recommend the reappointment of James Finley to the same committee. These are your two appointments before you tonight.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
So move.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 2 is a second reading public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 195 Hickory Road. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing. I'm going to read this by title. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken, certain property owned by William Buchanan and located at 195 Hickory Road, and to zone the same residential single-family RS-15. There is currently a house that occupies a site, and it's contiguous to the city on the north, east, and south side, and they would like to receive city sewer. The Planning Commission unanimously recommended this, and this is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 195 Hickory Road under the RS-15 zone.
Okay. Thank you, sir. This is second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move for approval of this annexation at 195 Hickory Road.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor. Okay, passes unanimously. Item 3 is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance concerning building elevations. Mr. LaDuke.
This is, again, I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending the City of Aiken zoning ordinance regarding building elevations for projects in the planned commercial and planned residential districts. For the last couple of years, Council has been seeing more and more PRs and PCs, planned residential PR, planned commercial PCs, and on just about every occasion you've wanted to see the elevations of what the project will look like in the future, and then have given the planning director some ability to accept those with some minor changes, but if any major changes came back, then they'd come back to you for some variances. Because of that reason, the Planning Commission has unanimously recommended approval to amend the zoning ordinance that would require all planned residential and planned commercial to submit the actual design of the drawing and structures for the PR and elevations of the facade for the PCs. So for your consideration and public hearing tonight is an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding the submittal of building elevations for projects in the planned residential and planned commercial zones.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is second reading and public hearing. And if anyone in the audience would like to speak to this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved.
I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, any discussion?
I just want to ask one question, which is basically, these elevations are becoming a part of the concept plan. Therefore, they are as enforceable as other parts of the plan, or is that language a little vague?
Typically, what we have done in the past, especially when we start looking at the housing design, if there's some minor variation from that, you've given the planning director the ability to make those changes. But if there's, you know, a major change to it, then it comes back to you. But we do know that sometimes the housing design changes a little bit from the models that they show you. I do know, like, for instance, we had a situation at the, I think they call it the shops at Richland, where the new Walmart is going in. They're not the Walmart structure itself, but the buildings that are on the easternmost side of it, which is a number of smaller shops. They came in with a little bit of a variety, a small variance to what was originally submitted. Ed didn't think there would be a serious problem with that. He and I looked at it together. He wanted to make sure that he was correct. And because it was just such a small variance, we said that's fine. So again, as I would like to see you give a little bit of flexibility to the planning director on that, but otherwise, yes, they would have to bring these in unless they stay substantially in compliance with what's submitted. They would have to come back to City Council again.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 4, second reading, public hearing of an ordinance to approve the access management regulations. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending the City of Aiken zoning ordinance and land development regulations regarding access management. We had some discussion on this, obviously, prior to the meeting. And if you go into the document that you have in the third to the last page, or what says page 3 on the access management regulations, it's a little table here, and this is probably the one area that obviously varies from town to town as to some possible changes, and there's no right or wrong answer in this, but it tells you how many access points or how many driveways you could have based on a local collector and arterial street. And down below it tells you what the definition of those types of streets are. And then it says, depending on your front footage in the left column for that particular development, it'll tell you then how many access points you could have, with the very last column saying if you had over 1,500 lineal feet along arterial, collector, or local, how many additional driveways you could have per 500 feet. You can see there's not a whole lot of change. The arterial, which is your major type roadway, then you could have in 1,500 lineal feet, three driveways for every 500 feet, you can have another one. Council, you know, this is a guide, this is what we're going to be asking for. You could obviously always go back on a development and allow more or less driveways in a development if you thought that there was some safety requirements involved. But this gives us a basis when a development comes to us as to what we're going to be asking for. An example of this would be, we have first reading tonight on a new development on East Pine Log Road for a commercial venture, equine commercial venture, and they're going to have just one access on that particular roadway, even though it's quite a bit of frontage, because that's all they feel they really need at this point in time. It also, as you get further into the document, gives more definition on width of driveways. It also gives spacing between driveways. So in other words, if you're going to have three driveways, what should be the spacing from driveway to driveway to driveway? Configuration, alignment. A lot of times you'll even say, okay, we'll let you have a driveway entrance, but it can only be a right turn out. And we remember when we had the fast food restaurant that was going to be by the bowling alley on Whiskey Road. You were very concerned about that, making a left-hand turn on Whiskey Road. So this is a guide. This gives you some basics here that the developer would be following. And then council, depending on the situation, may still say, yes, you're allowed X amount of openings, but because of the safety consideration, we'll only allow a right turn in and right turn out. So again, it gives you the guide. It's what I call putting a tool in your toolbox to help you as you look at developments in the future. And I know the Home Builders Association has given you a letter tonight asking that they have an opportunity to look at it. As I've told you in many other cases, sometimes you approve things and then we can always go back and relook at them if we need to in the future. Once we get into some real situations. But we have this for you tonight. There has been a lot of discussion. This has been on your action agenda, I would say, for now 2 years. It does give you the guidelines that we feel like it's what you've asked for. And the last comment I want to make is the fact that this is an access management guidelines that we have here in ordinance and regulations that follow most other cities in the state and other states. So this is a common document that most cities have. North Augusta has one very, very similar to this. So for your consideration tonight, this is a second read and public hearing of ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance and land development regulation regarding access management.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone would like to speak to this issue, you may certainly do that. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I have one question, and I think you can probably clear it up for me. It says that you don't get a curb cut if your property is less than 100 feet. Is that what it says? Mm-hmm. Looking in your chart.
Unless it's
so if I wanted to put a house on Whiskey Road on a piece of property that was 64 feet wide,
On a local road, like a residential area, it says you could have one access point. It also says, if you look in the star here, it says the Public Works Director and Planning Director could allow under a special situation unless no other access point is possible, the lot was existing at the time of adoption. So if you're subdividing a piece of property and it's less than 100 feet and you have access to some other property next to it,
you got to come in through the other property.
Come in through the other property. If it's been existing and it's under 100 feet, then you could have that access point.
I just don't see what... I was trying to look for something problematic, and I couldn't find anything when I looked at this.
Well, that's a good question.
I have a couple of questions.
Certainly.
Number one, where we are underneath the limitations based on type of street. Item number two and number three on under collector streets, no single family dwelling.
Can you tell me what page we're on?
On page three.
Okay.
And section E.
Okay.
Item number two, mm-hmm. collector streets, no single family dwelling, townhouse, or duplex shall have direct access to a collector street except when permitted by the land development regulations. Item number three, no single family dwelling, townhouse, or duplex shall have direct access to an arterial street. Just looking at the definitions of the collector and the arterial streets on the very back page, now there was a house built not too long ago on Richland Avenue, which the only access that they could have had is Richland Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would that mean that they would not be able to have a driveway?
First of all, it's an existing lot, and they would have to, you know, if there was a question like that, then they would have to go to see if Larry Morris is out there or not, but oh, there he is. Larry and Ed, for them to go ahead and to say yes or no on those situations. Obviously, that was an existing lot out there, and their only access was to that one location.
Mm-hmm.
But there may be some situations where, let's say there's two residential lots where we could have a common driveway.
Sure.
And so we're trying to look for ways to limit the number of curb cuts. On York Street, a number of years ago, and we're probably going back at least probably 10 to 15 years, when we did the beautification on York Street, we eliminated a number of the driveway cuts by combining some of the driveways together and putting common parking and the drives together. Every time you have an access point onto a public highway, especially a busy highway like Richland or York Street or Whiskey, that's just one more point of conflict between two vehicles on it, you know, merging together. So the less conflict you could have, the better off we'd have. A good example of if this were in existence today, that you'd probably be eliminating some of those driveway cuts is just north of Ryan's, there's a shopping center, there's Teresa's in there, and then there's a number of little shops. They have three driveways, and ideally they would have at most two driveways. But because of the way it was built and added on to, and so we're going to try to eliminate driveways. It also gives you the ability, if you feel there's a safety issue brought to you by public safety, you feel there's a safety issue, that would give us, through a vote by council, to eliminate a driveway in the future by trying to combine some of these together.
I fully understand what you're saying as far as businesses along that line, Roger. As far as individual houses,
mm-hmm.
You know, whether you have one driveway or whether you have two, you're not going to create any additional traffic. The same number of cars are coming in and out of there at the same times. whether they share one curb cut or whether each one has their individual. And it just concerns me. I know there was a house built there on Pine Log Road, right where Pine Log, not far from, not far behind the Food Lion Shopping Center there on Pine Log, heading out toward Richardson's Lake Road, a house over on the left. Okay. And my concern there is just, you know, when we look at these different type of roads, whether it's arterial or whether it's a collector road, you know, if that house indeed would have been able to have been built there. Right. And is it really going to create that much of a problem with just that residence traffic coming? I could understand if it were an apartment complex being built there. I could understand if it were, you know, attached housing. But a single family home is only going to create so much traffic. And I just didn't know, would those houses have been able to have been built? And, or would they have had to have a special exception?
And I'm going to ask Ed to get up there to answer that question, because he's the one that's going to have to answer it in the future. I can give you my answer, but since he's going to have to give you special permission.
This could be practice. The house on, excuse me, the house on Richland Avenue was on an existing lot, so it would have been exempt. It would not have had to comply with this. The house on Pine Log, I'm not familiar with.
I think the house was moved there.
And I believe it was an existing lot also.
But I think it's in the
wherever there's an existing lot, it would be exempt.
What if they subdivided the lot, though? I think that's the question.
You would have to comply.
And comply in what manner?
Well, if it was a, say, the lot on Richland Avenue was newly created, they would not be allowed to have a driveway. They'd have to go to the zoning board for permission, you know, for a variance to have a driveway. I mean, the intent is to prevent the creation of more driveways. It's not just a matter of traffic generation, you know, more cars, but additional driveways which can restrict traffic flow by, you know, creating more turning movements into those driveways. So that's the intent.
Well, as you know, as we all know, we're beginning to infill, and that's going to continue to happen. And as that happens, I mean, certainly if there is another way that this property could have access through a back or whatever, you know, I would like to see that happen. But I think we've got to be very careful in doing this, or, you know, what we're going to actually do is, you know, take some of the areas in which, you know, houses are not located, and they're not going to be able to do anything with that property from a standpoint of, you know, the person who owns the property is not going to be able to do anything with it.
But if they were subdividing it, if they were owning it and creating a lot and it was being subdivided, then they would need to provide an egress on their somewhere along the existing property before it was subdivided. Is that your point?
No. Jane, my point is, if, let's say if you owned 3 acres on Richland Avenue and it's not divided up and you don't have a house on the property, and now we're telling you that, you know, you can, I guess it's one lot, you could build one house, or if you wish to subdivide that property and put 3 houses on there, and there's no existing house with no existing driveway, that you can't do that.
Depending on the width of the property, right? If it were 200 to 500 feet, you could
have
one.
That's depending upon the road in which it's on.
And but that also depends on the width on this table.
So, now, if you look at number 2 and 3,
yeah.
Number 2 and 3 says that no single family dwelling shall have access to these two roads. And that concerns me for property owners.
But what does it mean when it says when permitted by the land development regulations?
Well,
Are the land development regulations not that simple, right?
The land development regulations are the old or the former subdivision regulations. And frankly, I'm trying to remember why that wording is in there. I think there must be something in those regulations that relates to subdivision of lots, but and it might have to do with the old PUD regulations, which is now PR, but I can't think off the top of my head of how the land development regulations would allow that. Frankly, I can't remember the...
It just seems to me like, why do you have this above, this table above that says if you have 500 frontage feet and you're going onto an arterial road, you could have, you had 505 frontage feet, you could have two. And then we're not trying to contradict that right below it, are we?
Well, we're only contradicting that with a single-family dwelling, townhouse, or duplex. But no other type business are we limiting it to that.
And that's the least traffic of anything else that could go there is a single-family dwelling. But when I look up at the table, the table contradicts what it says here on number 2 and 3.
It certainly does, except for less than 100 foot.
Right,
width.
And less than 100, you have some what if there, because if it's an existing lot, you could do it. If the driveway is already there, you can do it. But if you're creating a lot less than 100 feet, then you really can't. But if you read number 2 and 3, it really does conflict with what's in this table.
See, I thought the land development regulations were what's in the table. But they're not, right?
Well, I didn't understand what you said.
I thought in number 2, when it said, can't have that direct access except when permitted by the land development regulations. And I thought the land development regulations were what were at the top of the page.
No.
Okay.
You have to comply with both. You know, both the table and Section E both apply.
Ed, I'm confused too when I look at the two things here. Look at the words. In number 2 down here, collector streets, it says that you can't have a single family dwelling, townhouse, or duplex. No single family shall have direct access to a collector street. But up here in the table, it says that you can, if I understand it, except on that less than 100 foot width.
It's actually...
What am I missing?
Well, I thought you were through.
No, well, I am through. Go ahead.
They both apply. I mean, you've got to comply with E, and if E doesn't allow you to have a driveway, then... The table obviously is not going to apply.
Okay, so everything more than 100, you can have. You can have access, like 101 to 200 feet. You can have one.
Unless it's a single family home.
Right. And why is that?
That's what's done.
That's what I was asking.
We're back to your question. So why is that?
The
table says you can have one.
Right. Again, the Planning Commission recommended this, so I'm not.
Maybe they can.
But it makes sense, and the goal of this is to prevent the creation of more driveways. That's the whole point.
Well, you can't have any. I mean, and that's down here it says you can't have any. Up here it says you can have one with 101 to 200 feet.
Dick has an explanation.
I'm sorry.
I think
you can explain.
In English, as it works out to be, is that the zero confirms 3 as far as the 100-foot lots on an arterial. It's the other way around. The E is confirming the table.
I believe the conflicting point that we have is we would allow a business that could have 50 or 100 trips a day on it, have a driveway cut on a whiskey road, but a house that would have 10 trips a day we would not allow in that same 100-foot area.
Right.
And the two just don't equal out and make a lot of sense. If you allow one to have even more trips in the same area as a house,
that's right.
Why not allow the house?
well, again, if, I think the goal is, if you think of a road like, say, Sudlow Lake Road, which has been, used to be just a country road, basically, and now I think it's lined with single-family houses, each of which has a driveway. Mm-hmm. I think that's the logic behind this, is to try to prevent that kind of thing. Now, it may not happen in the city of Aiken, but that's the thing.
But if Sudlow Lake Road had offices where those houses are at, it would be okay.
Right, but then the spacing would kick in and it'd be further apart. You'd have far fewer of them than if you had a series of, you know, 80-foot wide single-family lots down a road, each with a driveway.
Well, Ed, this table up here says you can have one. If that Sudlow Lake lot is 101 feet wide, right? With a house on it, he could have one.
No.
No.
And where does it say no?
Unless it was an existing lot record. If it was existing at the time that this ordinance was passed.
That says one.
Except you can't have it under any condition.
Sudlow Lake would be considered a major or minor arterial, which means you could not have a driveway on a newly created lot. So you'd avoid the Sudlow Lake scenario with a lot of driveways, one after the other, on a major road. That's the intent.
So what are you going to do? Combine with the next-door neighbor into one, or what?
You might end up with a major road off of that road into a subdivision or into an attached housing development. You know, one intersection rather than a series of driveways.
You know, they've done that in Charlotte in some areas where there are a lot of houses, and they'll have an entrance like to Sharon Road and then a parallel road almost that goes in front of all homes. Takes some land.
Yeah,
well,
you know,
they did that in Crosland Park along York Street on the right when they built those houses. They built a parallel road with only two, rather than each house having an exit onto York Street.
That's correct. Good example.
But that was a development, and I think what's problematic for me, and I found it, I think, thanks to you, Don, is that it seems to me for years we've been talking about putting residential on Whiskey Road and stop some of the big boxes there to cut back on traffic. It says to me if I have a piece of property on one of these streets that I need to go ahead and plan to put something other than residential, because that's the only thing that's going to allow me to get to the property. But if I wanted to build a house on Whiskey Road or Richland Avenue or York Street or some other major street, then I can't, because I can't get access to the lot. And there's no room for me to have a shared or a minor road behind York Street that I could go into and then get to my house. There's not enough property there because my property isn't deep enough. And so I virtually cannot build a home on one of these streets, as this tells me right here. If I want to collect a street, or minor or major arterial street, I cannot build a house on the property that I have there. I have to do a business. Is that not right?
It's an existing lot at the time this ordinance is passed.
No, it's existing property, but it's not lotted out.
I think one of the goals of this ordinance is to change how people think about subdividing property, particularly along the major roadways. And if you, for example, if you had a lot on Whiskey Road that had 2,500 feet of street frontage, instead of turning that into 25 100-foot lots with 25 driveways, they want you to think really how you're going to subdivide that in such a way that you have a minimal traffic impact on Whiskey Road or a minimal driveway impact on Whiskey Road.
Would that not be better than putting a big drugstore or something up there where I get lots and lots of cars?
Depending on how it accesses Whiskey Road. If it only accesses Whiskey Road with one driveway to a commercial development.
One driveway is better than 25 driveways.
Right.
You've still got the same amount of traffic. coming in and out of there.
It's safety becomes a question there. However, with people entering what people are trying to go on a highway, and you've got 25 different entry points, you got a problem. You have 25 combined in one, you have a signal light, and it's safer.
That's if you have a signal light.
And you do at a certain point in the process.
Yeah, you can't always go by that.
But your initial question that you had, that's exactly what this says. It says you cannot do single-family homes. Now, the exception is they could go to BZA and get an exception on that. But that's the only way they would be able to do it under the current way that this is written. So in the future, if somebody wanted to, on your example, a Pine Log Road, they had a 150-foot wide piece of property and wanted to subdivide it to 275-foot lots, under this scenario, the way it's written, they could not do that and get a driveway unless they went to BZA.
But you would be able to create a road.
Yes.
A road that accesses the arterial road.
If you had enough.
That then feeds into the neighborhood that does the subdivision.
If there was enough property there to create that road.
Right.
But if there was not, then you've just got a lot that we're encouraging a business to go
over. Which is what you had before this ordinance was passed. You had the lot. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, you may have been able to subdivide that lot in such a way that you could have taken advantage of it prior to this ordinance being passed. You still have the ability to build a house on the existing lot. You may have thought you were going to subdivide it, and now we're telling you maybe you can't.
What is the state law on arterial road? Is it 300 feet? Is that the standard?
The separation, you're saying?
Yes, between
cuts. That's the county regulation. State.
I knew there's a 300-foot cut regulation out there now, and that's a county cut.
That's the county.
Except for single family. Single family lots.
That's true.
Even out of there, too.
Yeah, that just applies to major developments, not single family houses.
My other question is this. Have we looked to see how many pieces of property and where they are that would be affected by us passing this tonight? Has the Planning Commission looked at that to see where these properties are such that we are regulating them to know how many there are and where they are so that the owners of those properties know that this affects them?
Yeah, everybody's potentially affected. I'm not sure how you define affected.
Well, I mean, if someone has property on Whiskey Road that's 200 feet, they now know they can't get a curb cut for a single family home if they want to.
They can't, for one, for an existing lot. If it's an existing lot right now.
Gary, can you?
If the lot is existing tonight, there's a 200-foot frontage lot on Whiskey Road right now. That lot is exempt under Section 8.1.12 on page 6 of this ordinance. This says the provisions of this ordinance shall not apply to an existing lot of record approved before the effective date of this ordinance if the application would deprive the owner of all direct access to an abutting street. So somebody that has a 200-foot lot on Whiskey Road can build a house on it tomorrow, even if you pass this ordinance tonight. What they can't do is they cannot subdivide it into two 100-foot lots and then expect Ed to give them access to Whiskey Road.
For two houses.
Correct.
And then the next sentence says two.
It will have an impact on people and their ability to subdivide property that they own that is on an arterial street or a connector street. It will have an impact on their ability to subdivide, but it won't have an impact on their ability to actually develop their property.
Now, if they had a plan that demanded more curb cuts, with this, they could go to BZA?
Well, there's actually two things. They could go to BCA, or the rest of 8.1.12 actually says the Director of Engineering Public Works may waive any provisions of this article deemed to be impractical because of design constraints, and that's an opportunity for Ed and Larry to put their heads together and say, you know, this doesn't make sense. We ought to let them do this.
Yeah. But we don't want to do 25 curb cuts.
Right.
But it would also
right.
keep them.
Right. It will have an impact on the ability of a landowner to subdivide their property the way they may actually want to. But it doesn't impact their ability to actually develop the property.
And I would say in most cases, if it's on Whiskey Road, the highest and best use of the land, according to any realtor, would be, in fact, to do commercial or business.
Sure.
You wouldn't put a residence there. People aren't busting to get to a house on most of those busy streets. They want to be away from them. They want to pay less.
You know, when we start talking about this, and we're talking about putting 25 houses on an arterial road, I mean, I think you and I know that there would be very few places where 25 houses would go. But the thing that concerns me is on some of the existing property on whether it be Richland Avenue, whether it be York, whether it be some of the other that may be classified as arterial or collectors, that we couldn't put two houses and have access to those houses, unless it's an existing lot and we can only put one or have one access to it. You know, to me, it's just encouraging us to go businesses or something else on this piece of property. And, you know, so it concerns me as far as the property owners. What are we going to do to the value of the property in which they have, and what are we encouraging them to do? Would we rather have a single family home on that piece of property, or would we rather see them open up some type of business on that piece of property?
That's a good point.
Or let's say if it's not in anything that's zoned for general business. It's in a residential area. Now, have we just tied their hands with what they can do?
We've tried to do is get them to have one driveway where they might have had two or three otherwise.
I fully understand that it would be nice, it would be better for them to have one driveway, but you're not always going to be able to do that.
And that's why we have this thing about the Director of Public Works. We may waive any provisions if it's impractical. And also we have a BZA for that.
So if what you're telling
me... For what it's worth, I'm not sure how much property we have on Whiskey Road that's zoned residential anyway. That's in the city.
But I think, you know, let's not concentrate on Whiskey. You know, take the bypass. It would be probably a better... You know, there's the majority of the bypass is vacant right now. The bypass is inside the city. Or you could take Pine Log Road to the east. Lots of vacant land along there. That's the example of, you know, think about that. And if somebody had 3 acres along Pine Log Road and all of a sudden wanted to put up, for whatever reason, residential property, for whatever reason, you know, we may not think it's a good idea, but they decide to do it, there would be limited on the number of driveway cuts they could have there under this particular ordinance. They could not subdivide that in 80 or 90 foot frontage lots and put a driveway at each location. You'd either have to have common driveways or a frontage road going in there, like the Carlson Park example. Whereas if you looked at Bonneview along Whiskey Road, you could see there's a driveway cut about every 50 to 75 feet. And I believe that's what the Planning Commission was looking at, is do you want to have driveway cuts like this, or do we want to have some way to not have nearly as many in the future? But again, all I'm saying is the way that it's interpreted here, you could not subdivide and have individual residential lots on collector and arterial streets unless they went to BZA.
So an example would be the house you didn't like on Highland Forest. Remember when they subdivided it? So the Wolf House, you remember they subdivided that lot?
Don't bring
it. There was an issue of how much road frontage.
No, I'm sorry.
And council could pass it the way it is tonight. We could delete this from what it is, or we could go ahead and think about it and then take it up next meeting again.
I do have a problem with land development regulations, not knowing what that says. If you have that on number two, it says, except when permitted by the land development regulations. That's in here on number two, page three.
And you don't know, Ed, why that's even there?
No, it's probably been a year since we talked about that, and I honestly just don't recall.
And if you have a problem, we could certainly delete that portion from it. I think the bigger issue, though, is do you want to have it where no single-family dwelling units, townhouses, or duplexes have direct access? Yeah.
Well, I think that has merit. Certainly, we don't want a whole bunch of driveways off of off of the road. I understand Don's point too, though. I think the Planning Commission has spent a lot of time on this, and they've thoroughly discussed it, and they unanimously approved it with their wisdom. I'm sure they looked at all of these things, considered all of them, right in. Okay. I support this the way it is.
Mr. Mayor, should we call a question?
Okay. All right. Show of hands, please. All in favor?
You don't have a motion.
What?
You don't motion? Have a motion.
Yeah. No motion.
Yeah. I move we approve on second reading this ordinance for the access management regulations. I do think we could move ahead with it. If Don's point, I understand it also. If we get into it and we see that really creates a problem, I think we can take care of it later. But we do need, I think, the overarching principle established here. It's been around for a long time.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Okay. Any discussion? Any more discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay.
Three.
Opposed? Okay. Okay, it does not pass. 4-3. Right.
So what's the will? So the will of City Council is we don't do anything here.
Do we have another? I think we could accept another motion.
I would like to ask staff if they would research the land development regulations to see what the openings are here, and also to give me a chance to ride the arterial streets and see what kind of properties are there. That might be affected by this. What small parcels might be there? I am concerned about too many curb cuts and the danger aspect of having all those curb cuts on those arterial streets, but I just want to make sure I'm not overlooking what somebody may want to do with a piece of property that's already there.
Well, then, do we want to actually kill this tonight, or do we want to postpone this reading, as
well,
was proposed in the first place?
We have another motion, couldn't we, Gary?
My motion failed. Okay, my motion is that we table this and get further information on the land development regulation and then bring it back for a vote at our next regularly scheduled meeting.
Okay, now how do you want that information to come?
in our agenda packet will be fine with me.
Okay.
Is that? Yeah, all you're asking for is under page 3 where it says, except when permitted by the land development regulations, what does that really mean?
I mean, we didn't take it out. We left it in. We don't know what it means, and I just
Our recommendation may be to keep it in there for this reason or to take it out because there's no reason to have it in there.
Right.
So, and we'll get to that information. As far as driving up and down the roads to determine what small properties, it may be very difficult to determine parcel by parcel what small properties you may have versus large tracts. I mean, I wouldn't know.
If you would allow my motion to go forward and I could do what I need to do to get myself a little bit more information and perhaps get an affirmative vote on that.
Also, you'd have the home developers or builders could go ahead
and do their...
Well, yeah,
if they have any comments, they certainly could go ahead and...
I second your motion, Beverly.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion?
So it's being tabled is what you're asking to be.
Okay. If not, your hands, please.
Let me just comment here. I don't mind tabling the motion, but I'm going to express a personal feeling. I just think that we over-regulate things here. I'm finding people that don't even know how to move because of laws that we've got on the books. And so at some point in time, we just need to figure out what are we doing to our city with so many law, so many ordinances that we're placing on our books that people feel they can't even move their car, don't know whether to put a fence facing their home or turn it the other way. There's just so many laws that we're placing on the books, but I'll support whatever time we need to investigate this, but that's a personal feeling in terms of what we're enacting here.
Leslie, that's a fairly general comment. Do you have some specifics that you'd like to bring forth to the council at some later date, maybe?
I would.
So we can look at them?
Right.
Okay. Because it's hard to attack, you know.
I know.
Without knowing what you're hearing and seeing.
And I don't mean to confuse matters more, but I'm sitting here thinking about what council has done. In essence, with your first vote, you denied the passage of the ordinance.
Right.
In order to then continue discussing the ordinance, gathering more information, and then possibly having another vote at a future council meeting, I believe you would have to pass a motion to reconsider your vote on the original vote.
Okay.
And that would have to be moved by a member of council who actually voted against voted against passage of this ordinance. I think you voted against it, so you would actually have to push that motion to reconsider.
In essence, that is my motion to reconsider. I realize we have to do it immediately after the original vote, is to reconsider this with more information coming to us, and then we'll reconsider it at our next meeting.
Let's do the motion to reconsider first. And then
I move we reconsider this ordinance.
Is there a second to that?
A second.
Okay.
Don seconded. Okay. Any other discussion?
Yes, sir. May I? As I said, Mayor, with me, there's two things that concerns me. Number one is this chart doesn't agree with Section E, because, as you said, it shows where if you had 101 foot of frontage on the Collector Street, you could have one access. I think the two of those need to coincide with one another. Number two is I'm not in favor of a single-family dwelling not being able to have access, single-family dwelling or even a duplex. If someone were to build a duplex unit, not being able to have access if the piece of property were to be subdivided, I'm not in favor of that. I don't think that we've got property sitting out there on any of the streets, a tremendous amount of property that's going to overburden that street. Just like Richland Avenue, there may be four or five lots along through there. And how much damage is that really going to do to have, you know, out of those five pieces of property if 10 more driveways came out on Richland Avenue? I just don't think it's going to, I don't think that's where our problem lies. I think our problem lies where you've got a business located somewhere where you've got tons of traffic coming in, tons of traffic coming out of that business. I fully agree that we need to limit the curb cuts and their access. So I'm just saying that along the lines of what I could support If we were to bring something along mm-hmm. those lines back.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What Mary says you want to do.
That's what I said. I don't think it's a
you need to vote on the motion to reconsider.
We have a motion and a second. We've had a discussion. All in favor, show of hands, please. Passes unanimously.
And then you have a motion to table this ordinance to gather input from the city staff with explanations regarding what the land development regulations means to this ordinance. And to hear that at the next city council meeting.
And I think we need to add Don's comment here about the chart and the item two there. Or is it three?
And seeking clarification.
Don't seem to agree.
But the land development regulation may clarify the differences in the two. I don't know. I just, maybe not, but right now it doesn't.
You know, one of the things council could do if they wanted to would just be to amend on page three, if there's the support for it, and take out a number two and number three and just eliminate that. Where if you feel like this point in time, because this does not allow for single family homes to be on, added to the Richland Avenues or other ones, if that was not there, then you could do so without having to go to BZA. And that would eliminate all the confusion that you're talking about in both cases.
And then the table would apply to all property.
That's correct.
Well, that wouldn't answer Beverly's point of being able to do what she feels like she needs to do and travel around and get the land.
The other thing that concerns me that I have not mentioned is that today we have a street that's just a regular street. And then tomorrow it could be a collector. I mean, in 5 years from now it could be collector. And then as things develop, if we're going to put all of these businesses along the way, then it can become arterial. And so there's no, other than what's on the back of this, what's a regular street today could become collector in 5 years, and that impacts the ordinance itself. So as we grow and become and build more, we have our streets move up in categories. And so, you know, there are just some questions I have that I would like some time to think about. I might be the only one, but I just have questions.
For clarification, it's very seldom you see a street move from local to collector or collector to arterial. The only one that I could think of that may have changed in the last 10 to 15 years is East Gate Drive, which when it was originally built, there was not a mall, there was not a number of shopping, but now with more shopping and more residential units back there, it's become a collector road. But again, once you have neighborhood roads that are developed, they always stay neighborhood roads. And those neighborhood roads lead to a collector road, which leads to it's like a piping system with small pipes going out to larger pipes, going out to larger pipes.
So Hampton Avenue can never be
more than a collector.
But York used, when I came here, York was local. I mean, there were houses all along there, residential houses all along there.
But it had the right-of-way of it was sufficient enough to go ahead and to have that 4 to 5 lanes.
I mean, the lower end of Whiskey Road, I rode my bike, and it was just not a whole lot of traffic there. So I just know that roads change, and I just have some questions about that. But if you want to leave it and vote on it now, that's fine. I can live with your vote.
Well, now, if you changed your mind, you said you wanted to.
I have not changed my mind. I would like more time, but if you don't think I need more time, you know, we can let it go. Do we need another motion for that?
That's what you got to do now.
Well, we've got a motion to second the table, right?
She's fixing to do that. She ain't done.
No, my motion was to reconsider so we can get more information so I can get some questions answered.
The motion to reconsider has passed. We now need to do another motion. In
whatever kind of motion.
Your original motion, I think, was going to be to table it and get more information and clarify page 3.
Second, so we can move on.
All right, we've now got a motion and a second to table, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, and also we're going to be looking at those things you named, the land.
Right.
Land.
And what times?
Huh?
And what times?
And the chart.
Basically, I think what council is looking for is a clarification of page 3 of this ordinance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, at least
those two things. Okay.
So I guess everybody understands the definitions on the back of the sheet.
If they don't, they will by the time we get it again.
Okay.
Tony? Okay. All right. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor of tabling. Okay. Passes unanimously. All right. Moving right along now. Item 5, approval of the Powder House Landing Development Agreement. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, this is a this is not an ordinance. This is just coming back to you as a engineering development agreement that we have put together. And this is the project that at Powder House and Old Powder House Road that you approved about a month ago. You had asked that they come back with a developer's agreement to determine how that left-hand turn lane was going to be provided. And you gave us some guidance saying that it could be done on a lot basis, and that if the left-hand turn lane was developed by another entity, i.e. the highway department, prior to this project being completed, that that fee could cease. I originally told you that I thought the fee, based on the number of homes and a recent one we received payment for, was going to be between $800 and $900. Larry has looked at it a lot more in depth, found out that the right-of-way was not needed like the other development, also found out that the drainage improvements that was needed, because the ditches were larger and a lot of drainage was going to go into it, was not needed in this proposal because it's fairly flat out in that area. And so therefore the improvement was just going to be a little over $100,000 for the left-hand turn lane that was going to be required, or came out to $525 per lot. So therefore that is one of the key elements within the agreement. The other thing is, within this agreement, we are going to need land to put a well site. If you think of a wagon wheel with the hub being the center of it and the spokes going on out, the hub for us in our water supply system is the treatment facility center that we have on Pine Log Road next to Reeder. There's like a small mushroom out there. That's where we have our ground storage tanks and other buildings. Going out from there, we have spokes in various directions where we have new wells. This particular piece of land is far enough away from all those other ones that we could add a new well site and get another 1 million gallons of flow while still using the treatment facility, which is the main cost involved with any of those centers. We're also looking at additional land just north of the Reeder Industrial Site near Powder House Road, property that's owned by Millbrook Baptist Church, as another spoke going off in a different direction. In this particular case, the developers agreed to sell us property. We would go ahead and take funds from our utilities to reimburse our general fund or transportation improvement fund for this property, and therefore they would not be paying the $525 per lot until the agreed upon price was matched, and that agreed upon price would be based on their land sale, what they're paying for their property. We feel it's a good agreement between us and the developer and satisfies the conditions that you set forth in the original agreement, and we present it to you tonight for your approval.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I make a motion that we adopt the approval of the land development agreement.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 6, approval of DuPont Landing Development Agreement.
Yes, sir. This is a similar type of agreement. A little different in the fact that we've had several different agreements that we have approved with the Second Baptist Church that we're trying to tie into one document. This document is to help clarify both for Second Baptist Church and the city, the engineering department, as to our various agreements. They will then be able to take this agreement and use it to apply with their application for tax credit application from the South Carolina Housing and Finance Authority. The agreement is based on other ones that you've had in the past, which was we would go ahead and give them $1,000 towards the completion of a regional detention pond. We would reimburse for tap fees, assuming they would go ahead and have this tax credit project. It also just goes in and describes what we expect from them and what they could expect from us, and it's under the same format as we've had under several other agreements. Larry Morris has been working with Harvey Ramseur with the Second Baptist Church on this, and we recommend approval of the attached DuPont Landing Development Agreement.
Okay, sir. Thank you. We have a motion and a second on this.
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we approve the DuPont Land Development Agreement.
I'll second. Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under new business, first item, first reading of an ordinance to annex property at 1309 East Pine Log Road. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is, all those before were final. This is a first reading of an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken, certain property consisting of 5 acres of land, more or less, owned by Charlie and Louise Dickerson, and to zone the same planned commercial PC. This went to the Planning Commission under a special meeting recently because when the developer first came to them, it was for a piece of property, same location, but under the 5 acres. And the Planning Commission informed them that if it was 5 acres, then they could present exactly what they plan to do with that property. You could see exactly what it is and bring it under the PC concept. This piece of property is very similar to a retail store that is owned in Grovetown, Georgia, called Boots, Bridles, and Riches, except it's going to partner, in this particular case, up front with Purina Mills, and it'll be 19,000 square feet and will meet the needs of the equine industry, both for the horse and the rider. There were several conditions under this development that you see before it, that a plat corresponding to the proposed 5-acre parcel be recorded, that the annexation be contingent upon the sale of the property to the contract purchaser, development comply with the plan commercial provisions in 438 of the zoning ordinance, that the concept plan be revised to show the 10-foot undisturbed buffer with the statement that additional trees and shrubbery will be planted as required by the planning director to form that dense evergreen buffer, that the elevation narrative be considered part of the concept plan, that the applicant and contract purchaser sign an agreement with the city listing any conditions that would be recorded the RMC, and that all this be done in the next 180 days. Now, they do own some other property. They do realize as they prepare and get ready to develop the other 9 acres that they own, they will have to come back to the city at a future time. That property currently is outside the city, and right now they're not... have not determined exactly what they're going to do with the property. A lot of market factors will factor into, you know, what the future of that will be. So before you tonight is the first reading of an ordinance to annex 5 acres of land at 1309 East Pine Log Road as the planned commercial is set forth before you tonight.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we approve this ordinance to annex this property.
All right.
I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
We have a second? Okay.
And I just want to ask a question. On the map, that's the second to the last page, where it shows this is just then going to have one entrance and exit from Pineville. Right?
That is correct.
Okay.
Even though under the access management ordinance that we were just reviewing, they could have had more if they wanted to.
So, yeah.
Just have another question, Mr. Mayor. Did anyone say how many people they expect to employ with this? This is good for us. Happy to see this.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard.
Someone here?
They're here in the audience.
Oh, the Dickinsons here?
No, yeah, somebody's back there. I saw them.
How many people do you... How many people do you expect to employ?
I'm guessing somewhere between 12 and 15, some part.
Okay. Good.
Okay. And what's your name, sir?
My name is Richard Lichtenberg. I'm the owner of the...
Oh, okay. Okay. Very good.
It's good.
The Dickersons, the owner of the property, are here, and the potential buyer is here also, who plans to develop the property.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you for thinking of Aiken. Looks mighty nice. Okay, are there any discussion? Any more discussion? Questions? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously.
The second reading will be June 11th, and that will be the final reading on it then.
Item 2 is approval of a memorandum of understanding for the Aiken with the Aiken Community Playhouse. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I had mentioned to you in our budget session that we had recently that the city of Aiken, now that we've been in operation with our theater for a number of years, felt, and so does the Playhouse, that it would be a good idea to consider having a full-time staff person at the theater. Our staff, headed up by Sarah Rideout, has to go over there quite often and show the place and get involved with a lot of the details. By having a full-time person there, many of these things can be taken care of by that individual, and we would not have near as much need to be involved as we have it now. Also, ticket sales. A lot of times when people come in wanting to rent, they say, well, how about ticket sales? Well, we're not in the ticket sales business. This individual can handle the ticket sales and just make the operation a lot smoother. The key to all this, though, was to have an agreement between us, because we don't need a full-time person there, and the Playhouse, who is currently operating the theater with an individual of 28 hours a week. For the last 6 months or so, we've been working with the Playhouse. Glenn Parker has been working very closely, and we put together this collaborative agreement of an understanding between us and the Playhouse as to how this person, under what control and authority, and who would be in charge of what, how the payment would be. It would be a 70-30 split. The Playhouse would pay 70% of the salary, and we'd pay 30% of the salary. The person would be a city employee, though. If that employee was not able to be there, and we would try to schedule vacations and other things during the time of the year when there's no plays, during the summer or during, like, Christmas holiday break, but if for some reason they got sick or could not make it, then Glenn would have a staff person go ahead and run the box office and be available at that location. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval of a memorandum of understanding between the Aiken Community Playhouse and the City of Aiken to hire a theater coordinator, which is in the budget that you'll be approving there shortly thereafter.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay, we have a motion and a second.
So moved, Mr. Mayor. Okay. Let me add with that motion that we get a lot of traffic inside of the Washington office. The folks asking questions, a lot of questions in terms of when are they open, when can I get tickets, and they make several trips sometimes not knowing the time they can make purchases. So this will eliminate so many folks coming back and trying to figure out when we're open to sell tickets to. So.
We can put a little note in an Aiken report maybe next month or something if you think it's necessary to...
But once we pass the second reading of the ordinance, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second? I'll move.
Second.
Any discussion? Any more discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 3 is the first reading of an ordinance to establish new charges for water and sewer services. Mr. Duke, please.
Yes, sir. The next several items we have, we're going to concern our new budget for 07-08. The first one is a ordinance which says it's an ordinance establishing new charges for water and sewer services. We tracked over the last 10 years what our revenues were versus expenditures in the city of Aiken, and it was quite an eye-opening for us that our rates have only gone up 1.8%, where the expenditures have actually gone up 4.3%. Now, the 4.3% is really not a bad cost when you consider the electrical charges that have gone up over the last, especially the last few years, and the fuel prices that have gone up, and the fact that we've been giving salary increases of around 4% a year for our personnel for the last many years. Then we looked at where do we stand within the entire state. Our comparison to other water and sewer rates, and we found out that we're 52% below the state average, not 52% below the highest average, but the average within the state, we're 52%, and we're the second lowest in the state as far as our water and sewer rates, which was a little bit alarming to us, which is good. I mean, I'm very happy that we are where we're at. Somebody asked me the other day, well, this is 2005, why don't we get the 2006? We get all these rates from the state comptroller's office, and so these are coming from them who does the survey of all the utilities. They're always a year behind on all their rates, so that's why it's the 2005. The reason we have 800 cubic feet, that's what they use as their measurement when they measure and ask for these results from all the other ones, which is, for us as the average user here in Aiken. If council approves this, it would be approximately $1.50 on the average. That means that those individuals that are in one or two person household would be far less. Obviously, you have a number of members in the household, or if you do a lot of irrigation, your numbers are probably going to be higher than this. But it would average out to be $1.50 per person. So for City Council considerations, this first reading of an ordinance to increase our water and sewer rates by 5%, effective with the July 1st, 2007 billing, and upon your consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I will move that we establish new charges for water and sewer services.
I'll second. Okay. Any discussion?
How much money will we raise with this increase?
Is that Anita behind you, Henry? She's hiding. Did you hear the question?
How much we raise?
Yes.
Well, it would depend on the consumption for the following year.
Presuming the consumption is the same.
Just assume it's the same, Anita.
I'm thinking about it. My mind's a little slower tonight than you're normal. Sorry. Oh, three, that'd be six times five. It'd be about $300,000 based on the 5% number. Because understand, people outside the city actually will have a higher rate increase than people inside the city.
Okay, any other discussion?
Well, I have to say what I almost always agree with Mr. LeDuc, but I don't know. I find that I know we've been over this budget and everything, but user fees affect the poorest people, in my opinion. And I really think it's, I'm so proud that ours are this low. I think we're a very wealthy community, I look at all the extra things that we're able to fund, and I know that we are, and I just want to be sure too that in every case these new and increased costs are not the cost of development that should be not be borne by existing taxpayers.
And to kind of answer that question,
thank you.
We do have prices put in now for all new development. You know, we have $750 per tap for water. We have $400 per sewer. The only time that that's council has allowed that to be waived is on tax credit or state finance projects for housing. We have gotten in close to $1 million over the last 4 years for that, which is helping us to go ahead and build some of the capacity that's needed, as you're talking about.
That pumping station on the south side, is that part of this budget?
We're going to be putting a new well in as part of the budget, and that new well is going to be $550,000. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at a water tank on the south side because of the pressure and capacity problems. On the other hand, our water and sewer is one of those fees. You know, as I explained at our budget session, when you look at services throughout the state, and probably the biggest one to look at that's done either on a fee or a tax basis, you'll have some cities that charge a fee for garbage, and then you have some that take it totally out of taxes. So you either have a higher millage, mm-hmm. and you take it out of taxes, or you go ahead and cost recover it through fees. Mm-hmm. City of Aiken has said that we'd like to do it out of fees. It's a philosophical mm-hmm. Discussion. Water and sewer, though, has always been out of fees because there's no tax dollars to support water and sewer. So there are, I don't know if community, and there may be something, but I don't know of a community throughout the United States that does not pay for the water and sewer out of a fee collection. So in other words, 100% of your water and sewer is always collected by the fees that are paid by the users, whether it be individual residents, and so they have control over the volume of water that they use per resident. Whereas there are other services that are collected out of taxes, but this is not one of them. By law, you have to separate this, and that's why we call this the enterprise account versus the general fund account. So the two are very separated systems. We can't take money. If we had a great year in water and sewer, I can't take that money and put it into the general fund.
No.
You can't do that by law. Now, obviously, you could go ahead and start paying for salaries from your general tax dollars if you wanted to, but it's just not done for people that are in the enterprise account. I just wanted to explain the difference, because as we get to the next ones on the garbage, there is a, others do it differently, but on water and sewer, it's always been on a user fee basis, 100%.
The thing that, again, and I'll try to be brief, is that, you know, we talked about electrical and fuel. Well, everybody's had been hit hard by that. I mean, we've been hit hard in the city, but everybody that bills me an extra charge for fuel. I mean, everybody's facing this. Plus, in South Carolina, you know, we've got this local option 1% sales tax. That, again, is, to me, a tax on the poorest people. I mean, we're real good at figuring out ways to do that, and I still say, and I mean, this has nothing to do with what we can do, but the state income tax is ridiculous, is where it kicks in for the lowest income people, is in my opinion. So this is not the same thing as that. That's all separate. But the 1% sales tax hits that. The user fee hits that. I really have a problem with this.
When was the last time we had a water and sewer tax increase, fee increase?
Last year.
And we're still probably second lowest.
And we'll probably
be the second lowest, you know, in the state.
If things continue, we'll probably be possibly looking at another one next year.
Yeah.
But we're just so far behind.
Yeah.
You know, and the philosophical thing is, do you go ahead and just have small increases every year, or do you go ahead and have large increases every 3 or 4 years? We probably should have had smaller ones for the last 10 years, but We tried to, for about a five-year period, we didn't have any water and sewer increase whatsoever. And we were having some very good dry years, and we were able to make up for it with excess revenues in those dry years. And then all of a sudden, a couple of years ago, we had a couple of wet years, and all of our reserves got used up during that time. So that's why we only had increases of 1.8% over the last 10 years versus the 4.3% rise in expenditures.
Right, right. Well, no one likes to see any tax or fee increase, that's for sure, and I think we've shown that historically. That's one of the reasons we're second lowest of all these cities. But there does come a time when you have to make a change. You have to do something. So, any other discussion? We have a motion and second. All in favor of this approval of this ordinance, show of hands. Okay. Opposed? Okay. It passes 4-3.
Wait. Which I thought you had your hand up for the yes or no?
Yes.
That's 5-2 then.
5-2. Excuse me. My eyesight wasn't very good there. Okay.
Ready for the next one?
Yeah. Item 4, first reading of an ordinance amending Chapter 32 of the Aiken City Code regarding commercial garbage service. Mr. LeDuc.
This is an ordinance amending Chapter 32 of the Aiken City Code regarding commercial garbage service. And it, again, is one we've talked about. This is for the businesses in town. We have a $120,000 shortfall in the amount of expenditures we have versus the revenue we're receiving. We discussed this at Horizons. We even, and I don't feel we have to have a monopoly on these things. This is, could be done by the private sector, and I'll reiterate for the probably many times, we're just as happy to have the private sector do it. But it's a valuable service to the, especially that small business person who does get charged a higher fee by some of these private folks. But we are behind on it. There has been a lot of increases, as we stated, on the fuel and landfill cost. The suggestion that was made at Horizons was, let's increase it by 33% this year. Let's come back at Horizons and look at it again, seeing how that affects the different businesses, and decide at that time, do we continue with another increase, or what do we do? So we're recommending a 33% increase. Along with that, we're recommending that we go with a system that is used by the private sector, which is they base it on the volume and the number of trips per customer. So if a customer could go ahead and have less trips, same volume, by going with a larger dumpster, they will actually save some cost. So we have two recommendations to here, which are melded into one. One, the 33% increase would involve would be involved in this ordinance, plus the form of billing them would be changed to the number of trips and the volume combined. So this is first reading of an ordinance amending Chapter 32 of the Aiken Code regarding commercial garbage fees, and upon your consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Move for adoption, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Second. Second. Discussion? Any discussion? Roger, it might be well to if you have this right on the edge of your brain there, what will the $120,000 go for?
Well, all we're going to be doing is raising this by $40,000 this year.
Okay.
And this will go to make up the shortfall we have right now in our costs. We will still have a shortfall in the commercial services for garbage by $80,000 with this increase.
Okay, but basically that's for what?
This is for the dumpster service that businesses are now receiving.
Yeah. Okay, the shortfall, though. How is that affecting us, the shortfall? And how will that $40,000 help?
Okay,
is it salaries? Is it extra dumpsters? Is it a truck or what?
We don't look at it on a line item by line item basis. This the account. I mean, if you want to look at it and say we're short in people, or, you know, we're out there with the right number of people with the right number of trucks,
yep.
But at the end of the year, we're $120,000 in the hole.
Okay.
And this will make up that shortfall.
That money is going to pay for something that we are now in the hole of.
Okay, instead of using
fuel or whatever it is.
Okay,
it's
maybe
got to go for something.
Maybe another way of looking at it, instead of us supplementing this budget through the other tax dollars or other services, business license fees or whatever you want to look at, we'll be able to have that other $40,000 available for other services that we provide the citizens.
Okay, I understand that, but it's going to pay for something that you're having to pull money out of the general fund now to subsidize. And that might be some salary, that might be some fuel or whatever, right? It's got to be. If it's not for something, then we don't need the $40,000.
Again, the overall account is short by $120,000.
Okay, and it's short where then? Let me ask that question.
The overall
in the account, where is it short?
Okay, in the account we have salaries, we have fuel, we have our trucks, we have our capital depreciation.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at.
So, and that all adds up to a dollar amount.
Okay, but you can't say specifically
no.
What part of the account, if you will, what line item, so to speak,
no.
Is short.
No.
It's just the bottom line is
the short. Bottom line is short.
Okay. If you had to figure it out, you could do it. But you just don't keep that much detail or what?
Maybe I'm just not explaining.
Maybe I'm not understanding it.
Maybe you could explain it better than I can.
But if we're short $40,000, it's got to be short in something.
We're short $120,000.
Well, okay, for this year.
It's in our budget book, don't we?
I think we probably talked about it in the budget meeting, and I just don't remember, perhaps. I'll say it's my fault. I know it is.
The way it's set up, Mayor, on any of our accounts like this, our salaries are charged out, our truck maintenance is charged out, any chemicals we use is charged out, and then we have a single line item where we pay the county for our tipping fees. Those tipping fees have increased, and we have not passed on that cost to our customers. So what's happening is the fee that we currently charge is based on a per cubic yard basis. Mm-hmm. With that fee, we are not recovering the county portion entirely. Therefore, we're short in being able to pay for our trucks, our maintenance, our capital items. So as Roger's saying, when you look at the bottom line, it's $120,000. But if you look at any one line item, it's not $120,000. You actually literally will see that we're short just about everywhere that we are. And as you add it up, we get to the bottom line, it's $120,000.
Yeah, okay, I understand that. It's in all of these pieces, if you will,
yes.
The maintenance, the fuel, the tipping fee, and all that, and it adds up. The bottom line is $40,000.
$120,000.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm thinking in terms of this one. $120,000. Right.
Correct. We're asking for roughly.
But if you had to, you could go back and figure. You could see what each piece is.
Which accounts are we shortchanging?
We're shortchanging every one of those line items in that account.
The money has to come from somewhere.
The money is coming right now from our general tax revenue, I believe, Roger.
Yeah.
It's coming from our general revenue account.
General revenue account.
Yeah. Okay, I understand what you're saying.
Well, actually.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. I understand that now. Mm-hmm. I understand.
I was going to say, actually, it's coming from your salary.
That could be a little bit there, too.
I'm glad it's yours.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you.
Last time you get up there.
I'm only kidding.
Okay. All right. Now that we all understand. We've got a motion and a second already. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 5, first reading of an ordinance establishing new charges for residential and small garbage service. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance establishing new charges for residential and small garbage services where we are currently at a $12.50 rate. Again, this is, like I discussed earlier, it's if we're going to be full cost recovery for the service that we're providing. that number is probably closer to $16.50 to $17 per month per resident. A good comparison so that you could see how we rate. When we looked at other cities that charge by the monthly basis, the lowest was $16.47 by Rock Hill, going up to $18 for Conway. But then you even look at the private services, which I think is a good reflection of what it actually costs out there. Without trash service, without recycling service, you're at $15 to $17 a month for those services that are actually on the same street as what we're providing right now. So, you know, when we look at residents and people that don't have very much, they're paying $17 to Tyler and $15 to Ridgeway and Curry, and they don't even get as much service as we now provide. If we're going to get cost recovery on this, we need to get our rates up higher. We're recommending, as what was stated, I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago when we were over at the Rose Hill retreat we had, to raise this up over a period of time, starting with $1.50 this year, and then seeing again where we're at next year to decide what, if any, kind of increase we need. So our recommendation to you tonight is a first reading to increase our solid waste fees for all residential and small businesses by $1.50 per month, and upon your consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. I'll second it. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Opposed? Okay, passes 4. You too, Dick? You opposed?
Oh, no.
Thank you. Okay, so it passes 4-3.
Okay. Roger, just in your comment regarding the rates, I guess we just increased three items here, and you mentioned with the water and sewer and the garbage, we may have to do this every year. I'm just wondering how can we work it such that we will do enough that's sufficient without it coming every year, possibly every other year. But just
I mean, that certainly is something council could look at. If you want a full recovery on your water and sewer and your garbage and the other things. Again, the reason, and maybe I should be asking for much higher rate all at one time. You know, maybe it's easier for people to just say, let's add $4 to their fee immediately. Or let's, with the commercial, go up $120,000 instead of $40,000. With the water and sewer, and the reason we're not saying let's just go to the 10% rate or 15% is if we have a dry year and if things keep going very well, maybe we won't have to have a rate increase next year. Maybe it won't have to be as high as what we think right now. We've made it, and this is the reason why for the last couple of years we haven't had a rate increase on the garbage for I think it's 3 or 4 years now, because we did change the system. It has helped. It has made some improvements. It has lowered our cost. But certainly if we raise up $1.50 this year, we can look at it next year. Next year we'll also, this is our last year of losing money on the vehicle taxes. There was a time about, was it 5 years or 7 years ago, when our vehicle taxes were at 10.5%. And I'm not saying right or wrong being at 10.5% versus where we're at 6%. But at 10.5%, we were consistently growing because our city was growing and the cost of vehicles was growing and the types of citizens that were coming into our community were bringing multiple vehicles in. We were rising up at around a 10% increase every year. When they passed that tax in the State House and said, let's go from 10.5% down to 6%, their thought was that all communities would stay whole because of the continual increase you were seeing going up based on the price of the vehicles and the population increasing. Even though we're going to go a 0.75% decrease every year, you would not see a difference in revenue in the communities. Well, our community was was one of the top gainers in the state in that line item. Yet we have lost in that time frame. Not only did we lose the fact that we could have been gaining at 10%, but we've been dropping around 5%. So we've had about a net loss of a year, about 15% of what we were getting before. Hmm. Instead of increasing the vehicle tax and continuing, or at least staying even, we were actually going down. Well, this is the last year that that reduction will take place. So we're hoping that with annexations like at Gem Lakes and with the fact that this is the last year, that hopefully we will not see as much of a decrease as we've seen in the past. But there has, between that and the telecommunication, where we lost well over $500,000, not just one-time loss, but that was every year of revenue that we were getting just a few years ago. So the city of Aiken, and I know we've retweeted this over and over and over again, but the city of Aiken has lost what we were receiving just a few years ago, over $1 million in revenue. $1 million in revenue, that's like saying we could add 20 more police officers and other vehicles and other services. It's a tremendous loss that we had to make up some other place or reduce services. And if there's one complaint I get from employees, they feel like we're not always providing as many employees as we need out there, as many vehicles, as many things as they need. And it's been a tough time the last 5 years because of these losses. So that is why we're trying to take it incrementally at a time. Will we need it next year? Right now I'm just poisoning you, putting you in position, saying that if we want full cost recovery based on where we're at today, we probably will. But we'll take a look at next year if there's any way we could, would not have to have it. Because I understand exactly what many of you are saying. There are individuals out there that $1.50 a month is a lot of money. On the other hand, a lot of people buy a soft drink or two almost every day and spend $1.50 a day.
That would cover it. Plus, when you look at the gasoline,
you know,
you go from here to Augusta and you've got to.
And yet, you know, other people could have those increases. You know, like SE&G has passed on their increases, and the other people that we buy, and it seems unfair in some ways that we can't pass on the increases that we're receiving. PSA, for example, the county has passed on a 5% increase for several years. The landfill's passed on an increase, you know, to take the stuff and to landfill it, because they know their costs are going up, but yet we have not been passing those on. So we're kind of suffering from the fact that we're not keeping up with those that are passing on their increases to us.
Absolutely.
So we understand the dilemma that we're all in, but it's, again, are we going to try to fully cost recover this or not? And so what we're presenting you is to try to get a full cost recovery on all these different services.
Okay,
item 6, first reading of an ordinance setting millage rate for the fiscal 07 and 08. Here, Mr. Leduc, please.
Yeah, this is an easy one. All you're doing is setting the millage rate. We're setting it at the same millage rate we currently are at, which is 71 mils. We do know, though, that come September, October time frame, the reassessment should be in full effect. We, at that time, will get a tape from the county of all the different properties within the city of Aiken. The finance department will spend a few weeks looking at that to make sure that the numbers they're giving us correspond to what they feel the values are. In other words, there's something that's just not wrong in those numbers. Once we have those numbers, we feel comfortable with them, we will be coming back to you, and we will actually be setting a different millage rate. And we have to follow state law procedures. But at this point in time, by state law, we do need to pass a millage rate. And we are recommending to you to stay at the same millage rate we have. As I said, we have not gone up in taxes, which is another choice that council could have used. But we have gone 19 years and actually have had a couple of decreases in that time frame. So for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance setting the millage rate at 71 mils for next year. And upon your consideration, second reading would be held.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Sorry.
Who's who?
Beverly could take it.
Beverly and Leslie. Okay. Any discussion? Well, we talked a lot about those increases, and we didn't talk much about the fact that you did mention 19 straight years. I'm very proud of that, and I hope we all are proud of that. And thanks to the growth of our city and some cross-training and some other things and with the city employees, I think that we all ought to be pretty proud of the fact that we haven't raised our millage rate in 19 years.
I'm proud of it, but the answer that I have to respond, the comment I have to respond to out there is that, yes, you've got a great record with the millage rate. Look what you did to my fees.
Fees, though, in most cases.
It's a user. People using that. I understand that, and I know how to explain that, but that's what the public.
Well, you know, if we increase their property taxes, they're going to pay more with the property taxes. The way I look at fees in most cases, it may not be every fee, but there are things that we can control to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
If we could cut down maybe on the water we're using. I know I could certainly do that in my house. If this gets to be a problem with me, I could easily cut down the water I use. Now, maybe some others can't. Maybe they're already down as low as they can go. But in most cases, I think fees are something that we can have some flexibility with on our own part. But we can do something about lowering those in many cases. Okay, any discussion? Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 7 is the first reading of an ordinance approving a budget for fiscal year 2007 and 08. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by title. It's an ordinance adopting a budget proposed by the city manager containing estimates of proposed revenue and expenditures by the city of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2007 and ending June 30, 2008, and declaring that the same shall constitute the budget of the city of Aiken for such fiscal year. We've had a lot of discussion. You know, we've obviously talked about the increases, but you know, with all that, there are a number of services that we do provide. The staff just does an excellent job. I believe we have 5 staff members that are still out there that are hung in there, and they just do a great job. And I can't say enough about each of the departments and what they do, the services we provide. When I talk to new citizens especially, they're just overwhelmed by the good things that we do here in the city. Mm-hmm. And it's not to brag on the different departments, but they just do provide an excellent, excellent job. And I know I get some complaints now and again, but those are more rare than really the compliments that I do get and do receive. Some of the things that we are going to be doing new this year that we haven't had in past budgets, we are going to start a succession management program. I really personally feel that this is going to be critical for our future. We need to make sure that, you know, as we were talking about earlier with the tennis program, that is, with the aging of our staff, is just as we have with the population, we need to make sure that we have individuals, not that we're going to guarantee that we're going to hire them for any position, but they will be in a position so that whether it be city council, the next city manager, or whether it be the city manager for the next department heads, we'll have people poised in a position that will be trained and ready to be considered for those new positions. And we're especially going to be looking at minorities in this particular case and looking at how do we get individuals hired in at those entry positions so that they will eventually be able to move on up to other positions. We are also looking at finishing up what we started about 10, actually it's been, gosh, it was in the early 90s, a survey of all of our homes in the city, especially as we look at Old Aiken. There are a number of homes out there that have never been surveyed and are valuable pieces of property that we need to look at protecting. Susan French and I have had a great discussion on this with Ed Evans, and we feel that's an important thing that will complete the circle of our historic value and preservation within the area. We are going to go ahead and start the drawings here for raising the roof here on this building. You know, we're looking at a third floor going up above us here for more room so that we can go ahead and provide office space so we don't have to be scattered throughout the city, but yet can retain this great building that we have for individuals. We're looking at having some EMTs on the different shifts. And that'll be a high priority on Pete's part by trained individuals or hiring individuals that can be used for every shift having at least one EMT to provide that extra service to not everybody, but for city residents and city businesses.
Can you talk about four there, Roger?
Well, there's four shifts, so we would have one for each shift. Is there four shifts for? Yeah, four shifts. The PRT master plan we talked about, just, you know, when we start talking about costs, it just boggles my mind when I look at the software. I mean, we're not talking about a little Microsoft Words program or something, but we're talking, at least initially, $400,000, and it'll be more than that eventually, for software just for public safety alone. So that we could communicate between us and Augusta, and the county, and the state, and just to bring it up to where it needs to be. And then $80,000 we're going to be spending for parks and recreation. We've been trying to set aside money, but in this case, we do not have near enough money in depreciation for that, and so a lot of the money is coming out of just out of the general fund this year. Rye patch renovations, the anti-theft, you know, we talked about that in concern. So we have a number of things that we're going to continue, and then again with this, a number of new employees. I don't know if we're proud of the fact that seven of those employees are going to be working for public safety. I know Pete's proud of that. The other departments are probably going to be very jealous because he's getting seven, and all the other departments combined are going to only get six. So I think it's a good budget. We're excited about it, that we feel that most all the needs and concerns and the goals that you had will be met, and we're moving in the right direction. So for your consideration tonight, this is the first reading of an ordinance to improve the entire budget for fiscal year 2007-2008. And upon your consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
I so move, Mr. Mayor, to approve the budget on first reading.
Okay, I'll second it. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I want to applaud staff on some of the things that they have put in this budget. I am especially proud of the fact that we are moving forward with the EMTs and public safety. And all the wonderful things that we have in this budget. I just want to say that having voted against the two rate hikes, it might be, I don't know what you call it, but I just feel like maybe I shouldn't vote for this budget as it is written because it does include those rate increases, and I don't want anybody to think that it reflects on anything else in the budget other than those two items. I know that maybe even on the water, you have some control over that. You can just use less water. But I think people do want to have garbage pickup, and I think that that's not a fluctuating rate. It's a one rate. But I do want to applaud staff for the wonderful things that they have put in the budget and just say to you that it doesn't reflect on any of those things. It just... this is another year when I just don't feel that I should go along with the rate increase on the water and the sewer.
Okay. Any other discussion? Comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. 5 opposed? 2. Passes 5-2. Okay. Item 8 is approval of the city paving list. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Every year we have come before you with a paving list. Again, it's one of those situations. It's very interesting. 15 years ago, we didn't have a paving list because we didn't have city streets that were old enough to be paved. But about 20 years ago, the State Highway Department quit accepting streets to be put into their system. That's why initially every street we had in the city was a state street. Now, all your new subdivisions, all the streets are city streets, they're not state streets. For that reason, we are gaining more and more city streets that need repaving. And I'm very proud of the fact that the Public Works Department has been able to keep up with that paving and getting you this list and timely getting out there and getting these streets paved. I say that only because the State Highway Department, which has an obligation to pave their roads, and maybe I shouldn't get on them, but I just need to. We were supposed to be getting C fund money on a regular basis from the Highway Department, and we're not getting it. And we're a couple years behind schedule now, and it's a problem statewide. I know it's just not us, but for that reason, we're behind the schedule. I know a couple of you have called me recently on some projects and said, well, I thought we're going to be paving such and such street in the near future. And the answer is yes, that was approved a year ago, maybe 2 years ago by City Council. Well, the Highway Department is now 2 years behind, Larry. Now, they said that they're going to try to get some paved this year. I only hope they do. All I can say is our obligation is on these streets here to get these paved. Now, I imagine what the Highway Department would love to see us do is to start paving some of their streets. But what is before you tonight is not the debate on the Highway Department streets, but is a listing of streets for your approval tonight that are in the city system that we're asking to get paved. And then after you vote on that, if you want to talk about the state streets, we could do that.
Well, can our legislators help us get this money? Is that not there, or is that that committee that does what it feels like?
Obviously, the Highway Department has been in somewhat of a disarray when the former director resigned, and it's been under an acting system. My understanding also is the legislators recently voted to go back pretty much with the former system used to be, with a former highway commissioner is going to head up the state highway system. Maybe it'll improve, maybe it won't. I don't know. Can't be much worse than it has been in the last few years, and the fact that we haven't been able to get any streets paved. I have to say that 3 or 4 years ago, they were pretty much right on schedule, and we were getting about $250,000 a year under C fund money. And we would give them a list of streets, and generally within 9 months to 12 months, we'd have the paving done of those streets. And it worked very well. It's only been the last few years that we've had this problem. So I'm not too sure where the problem is at. Is it money? Is it leadership? And so once that new system is put in place, then I would say yes, then we could go to the legislators and possibly do something about it.
You think that new system's going to be soon, or we don't know?
My understanding is the Highway Commissioner was approved within the last few weeks.
Just two things. Do you know that woman, the former highway director, sent out 10,000 invitations asking for $50 donations for her retirement party?
Who's this?
Amazing. I mean, the state had an entire editorial about it. Can you believe this? I mean, how embarrassing. It's only $500,000. That's nice, isn't it? I mean, maybe they could pave our streets with the retirement party money. You know?
2 years.
The other thing is, why is Downing Street? Isn't that just an alley?
Larry?
Number six.
Jane, one thing. In all the council, we need to, all of us, individually, collectively, however we can, is be talking to our state representatives about these things. Mm-hmm. We need to be on them all the time, as far as I'm concerned. There's some money. I just found out 2 days ago there is some money in the, what do they call it? The Infrastructure Bank. Don't know how much. The representative I talked to didn't know, but he says there is some money either there or being put in there. Now, that may not be used for paving these streets, but they could certainly be used for connector roads and that kind of thing.
That's correct.
And it was Roland, I was talking to Roland about it.
And we need to get our paperwork in there to them, get it on the list so that when the money is available, that they can apply some money to it. And then we can go to them and say, hey, help us get some of that money. Heretofore, it's been gone. You know, most of the money that's come to Aiken County has gone to the Bobby Jones. All that hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're putting in another $50 million, I think it is, to bring it back up. They took some things out that they wanted initially. Now they put some money back in so that they could have it more of a first-class roadway instead of not so first-class. But really, we do. We all need to do this. I've done it quite a bit. I can do it more, and I'm going to do it more. But if everybody's doing it, you know?
They might address that at the municipal meeting, you think, maybe? So that we can.
Yeah.
It was a state, because yeah. You know.
That's part of our hometown connection thing, you know, that showing the value of the cities and the towns and how important they are from an economic standpoint, the economic engine, that kind of thing. And some of the legislators don't seem to understand that, but some of the things that they do. No names mentioned. Larry, excuse me. Go ahead.
The question on Downing Street and another street that is on there is Eustis Park. They're listed as city streets in the Aiken County tax mapping, and I had our engineering staff go ahead and rank them and put them on the list. We will be checking both of those to make sure that they are truly Aiken City streets. I believe the Eustis Park Drive or street or whatever it's called is actually the parking lot for the old school maintenance area over there next to Eustis Park. Obviously, we do not want to be paving their parking lot. So we'll be looking at both of those to make sure that we're not paving something we shouldn't.
Well, Downing just looks to me like either the driveway for the phone company or the development next door. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And we have been notified by our planning department that there is a developer looking at putting in some homes behind number 10 Downing and then using Downing Street as the access. So apparently there is a street there, but whether or not it has ever been dedicated to us, I think, is the question. It's 15 feet wide is what it is.
Larry, are you familiar with the street on that goes between Chesterfield and Newberry?
I think that's called Newfield. Newfield Lane,
Newfield,
I believe is what
Lane.
It's called.
Are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar with it. We really didn't even know it was in existence until, I guess it was last year, maybe 2 years
maybe
ago.
Maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
And that is not on our list at this point in time. That basically is a driveway for, I think, one or two homes back there,
mm-hmm.
Is what it is.
They always mention it in meetings that it's that when we list the streets in Aiken that are not paved, we should list that one because it is not paved and they want it paved. But
we can certainly take a look at that and add that to the list as council would recommend. Yeah. We would have to actually construct some type of street through there because it is unpaved.
It is unpaved.
Basically, this list here is to repave streets that already have paving on them.
I understand. I just didn't know if you knew about that street or not because it gets mentioned every now and then.
I am aware of it, and we can certainly add it to the list as council desires.
Tell me where Gaston is. Gaston? Gaston Road. It says both ends,
okay.
Number 9.
Gaston Road is roughly parallel to Beaufort behind the DHEC offices and
mm-hmm.
the South Carolina Credit Union offices.
That's what I thought.
It is basically dirt, but there are two sections that are paved. One is next to the Timmerman Veterinary Office. That area is paved. And then the other one is up in front of, I believe, two residences where Willow Run Road meets.
Mm-hmm.
So those two areas.
Yeah, I drive that road. That's why I wanted to know if that was the Gaston Road.
That is it, but it has a large dirt section between those two that is in fairly pitiful condition not one that we're recommending paving. You know, it is a dirt street, but the the traffic on it is not something that we would be looking to recommend paving for.
You know we use that. That's our entry point.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I'm aware of that.
Okay.
Larry, Newberry Street's in the state system, isn't it?
Newberry is state system, except for the festival area, which is...
Okay. As you come across Park Avenue and then going on down, that's in terrible shape. It's been on the... I think it's on the list. It should be on the list several years ago, I think.
It definitely was.
It still is?
It still is. The state just did about three streets for us from a list that was turned in, I believe 3 years ago, and that would be in the Dunbarton Oaks area. Dunbarton Circle was just paved by the state. Mm-hmm. But that's about three-year-old money. And then the other streets that you're talking about, we've got some terrible situations out there, but every time we've talked to the maintenance engineers, we're told, well, it's on the list, it's in the works. And they're telling us they're hamstrung because they do not have the funds. The funds theoretically exist, but they've never been told, go spend the money.
Okay. We need to go to work. We need to all... talk to our representatives about that and see what we can do to get that. That's terrible to have a list that old. Mm-hmm. I mean, that we travel this road every time, going back and forth Newberry, over Park.
Yes, sir.
Y'all notice, does anybody else notice how rough it is?
Mm-hmm.
And parts of Park are rough as well.
Yes, sir. And the Chesterfield and Park intersection is extremely rough.
Oh, it's awful.
From the courthouse.
And we're going to wait for the state to come in and do something about that?
And it's either that or use our funding. And right now, with the number of roads I have to pave with our funding, I'm not recommending that we pave their streets. We'd have to
use our funding.
Yeah, they would love it if we would take over and start paving their streets with our funding.
I reckon they would. Need a big sign out there on these roads saying, these roads are state roads, and if you have a complaint, talk to your state person. Or this road is rough because the state won't provide the money, because it's a state road and the state won't provide the money.
I know we do have calls on a very regular basis from citizens about rough roads that are state maintained, and the only thing we can do is apologize and direct them to the state maintenance engineer.
And we do patch the potholes. So
if they don't patch a pothole within 24 to 36 hours, well, 24 to 48 hours, then we do go out and patch the potholes. We just don't feel that we can leave that go.
You know that broken drain I mentioned to you and Roger, and I know it's not your fault, out at Eastgate? It's still there.
Yes, sir.
It's been there for at least 2 months with a orange cone sticking in the middle. It used to be three cones. Two of them disappeared, I guess. There's only one in there now.
Yes, sir.
And that's state, right?
That's state. Fact is, that's a numbered road, SC-19. That's one of their primaries.
Okay. And you've talked to them, I think.
We've turned that into them.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Larry.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you mind having some of your folks to ride through Kennedy Colony? There are several streets in there that are, I don't know what's state and what's under our control.
We can look at it, yes.
And look, there are some with potholes as well that's been there for some time.
A portion of Tennessee is state, but most all the other streets, if I recall, are city streets.
In Kennedy Colony, I think that's correct. I know a portion of Tennessee down to where it breaks over the hill is state.
Yeah.
But we can look at that. We have ridden every one of them and ranked them.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be on the ranking list.
Okay.
On that, and we certainly can provide that, you know, to Roger, and he can pass that along to council.
Thank you.
Okay, we ready to get a motion and a second on this? I don't think we've had one.
Move for approval, Mr. Mayor, of the paving list.
Second, Mr. Mayor. Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 9, resolution to purchase property in Edgewood subdivision. Excuse me. Mr. LaDuc.
We're coming to you with a recommendation to purchase two pieces of property in Edgewood. One of them was a vacant lot on Hampton Avenue. 61 by 103, and they're asking $15,000. The second one was a house. And unfortunately, when you look at it, and you compare it to the size of the other property, it's actually a smaller size property, but it's going to cost us more money because there is a house there. But because of the condition and everything with it, we're recommending we buy it anyways and then tear the house down eventually to clear out an area where we could get some decent housing in that area. So our recommendation is to acquire these two pieces of property. We did have an appraisal done on it because there's been a lot of questions in the past as to are we getting the value for these things. Both the appraisals came in at saying that they were at the value that was being asked for it. And so these two pieces of property would be $40,000, and our recommendation is that you pass the resolution to purchase these properties in Edgewood Subdivision.
Okay. Do we have a motion? A second.
Second. So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Huh?
I can't make a motion.
What?
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Beverly and Leslie, okay. Any discussion? Well, that house, what are you going to do with the house? Just move it? Remove it or tear it down or what?
Tear it down is what we're looking at.
Okay. Okay. Any discussion? And if not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, we said we would add two items. Discussion of the non-resident fees.
You want me to talk about it?
Yeah. Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Okay. Back in, I believe it was 2000, at a Horizon retreat that City Council had, we determined that our recreational fees were falling far behind what our expenses were for non-residential programs. Because of that reason, Council stated to go ahead and to start increasing the fees for the non-residential users. I attached a chart, it's kind of midway in that thing, but in 99 our fees for youth for outside the city was $7.50 and adults $10. After that Horizon retreat we raised about $10, then 2 years later we raised another $10, and then we raised it to $35, and we're now saying that on some of the sports we need to raise to $40 for the youth and $45 for the adults. We will probably never go ahead and break even on our baseball. Baseball costs well over $100 per individual, and if we were to go ahead and ever try to cost recover for outside the city, we would probably have the demise of our baseball program. So we're, but we feel that it's been a number of years since we raised our fees. It's been 4 years since we've raised them, from $27.50 to $35, and that we need to do that, plus the membership that it costs for a family if they want to come in the city and get a reduction for all their fees. So that's our recommendation to you. If you would like to vote on it, you can. We have not voted in the past for these, but we could certainly do so.
Roger, question. This is for non-residential fees, of course. How about residential fees? Are we okay there?
Well,
and just haven't come up to speed on the non-residential?
It comes down to we have philosophically tried to look at, are we recovering about half of our costs for residential individuals? Now, there's no rhyme or reason on the 50%, but we've always tried to say if we could get about 50% of our costs back on city residents, then we feel comfortable. If we start raising those up, then the differential between the in-city and out-of-city become closer and closer. We feel there should be a separation. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why do people want to come in the city if they can go ahead and get the services at close to the same cost? So we feel comfortable with the residential. We have not raised our residential since when, Glenn?
We've actually raised residential in baseball since we had the out-of-city.
But that's all? Or have we done it on the other sports too?
Baseball, softball, and youth soccer, I believe. We tried in some of the years where we didn't increase the non-resident fee, we would increase the actual registration fee, thereby everybody was contributing toward that magic 100%. Right.
So you're trying to keep that a differential there as you go?
In some ways, yes.
Expanding it a little bit, maybe?
Correct. The goal of council, as Roger said, in 2000 was to get to where county residents are paying 100%.
Right.
And that's a number that changes every year as our cost of operations go up.
Okay.
Now, we reached that pretty much on soccer and on basketball, you know, where we've been able to raise those fees up high enough to, and again, you can look at it and say, okay, in soccer and basketball, what are our costs? Well, there's not a whole lot of cost in that, but when you start looking at baseball, you start looking at catcher masks and gloves and the vests and those, maintain those fields is very, very, very costly. And you have lights for the fields. It's just a very, it's an expensive sport, just like football is very expensive because of all the equipment and everything else that you have to have. But again, we've been trying to keep our cost for residents down to a level that, and again, we've used the artificial 50%. I mean, council could certainly say, well, we should try to recover 75%, or maybe 50% is too high. But that's the number we've been using. We have not raised that up for a while, but we do feel comfortable with the fees that we have for in-city residents. The only other thing that we're looking at changing, and we haven't presented this to you, and Glenn and I still have some discussions to have on this, we are concerned not with so much the cost of recovering anything, but some of the activities that we're seeing at our recreational sites. And I'm talking about H.O. Weeks building, the gyms, and at Smith Hazel. We've seen some activities that we're not real happy with occurring in the gyms. And we're finding out, we believe, that most of those activities are by individuals that don't even live inside the city limits. And it happens during open gym periods. The only way you can control that is that if everybody that goes through the door has a card, city residents, if we do that, would get a card for free. Out-of-city residents would have to pay a nominal fee. It's not to recover money, because that's not the object. It's knowing who's going in and out of those gyms so that if there is a problem, you'll know who was there. Because as people go through with their cards, you obviously it swipes and identifies who that person is, and we'll have some control over it. That's something, again, we're not bringing to you today. We're talking about it. North Augusta had some problems. They went to that type of a system, and it's worked very, very, very well in the past for them to control a lot of the activities that were occurring in their city.
Roger, how do you stop someone with a card letting that buddy in that doesn't have a card?
Instead of having two doors there, you'd only have one door that you could enter.
Right.
And there's a chance that, you know, you got some doors there that people could be going out of that, you know, you usually put an alarm system or some kind of other system, because you have to have additional exits. Just like in North Augusta's center, they have several different exits you go out of, but you only have one door that you go into.
But do you depend on an employee that being there watching everybody that comes in?
Absolutely. And we already have employees there every hour that the center is open, except we now have two doorway entrances, and so we know the people come in the one doorway entrance, but in the secondary or the old entrance that used to be the main entrance, we don't know who comes in and out of that door.
And that's part of the request for the new software Roger was talking about earlier.
Would give us the opportunity in the future to do something like that. But if we're going to do it, we're going to have to make some modifications on the building and on the entrance. And Glenn and I have been talking about this probably for the last two or three years, and we'll probably be ready to come to you with some proposals later on. But it's a big change.
It's a safety change. It's a good...
improve safety potential problems, huh? Okay, that's the discussion. We didn't decide. We didn't say we're going to vote on anything, but just to discuss this. The other item was undergrounding, Jane, that you brought.
Well, you had that paragraph in the issues and updates about underground wiring, and I'm wondering if there's something that we've approved that has not been built or even started, or you know what I mean? Do we have to grandfather every single thing in? Or?
No, what I believe we're trying to say, Ed and I went back and forth on this issue for a week or so, was the fact that we have never had this problem really up until this last year or two, because we haven't had the switching over and subdividing the property. As Councilmember Wells has stated, more and more these vacant pieces of, I'll call them in-city properties, are becoming more valuable. And what was properties that people just didn't build on in the past, now people are looking at building on. If you strictly look at the interpretation of underground wiring, it would require on any property that's subdivided, not an existing lot, but a property that's subdivided, that the person would go ahead and take from the pole that's in the center, bore underneath the road, bore all the way really to the house, and instead of being overhead, it'd go underground and on up. We haven't done that. We feel that anything that was approved up until this time, Ben Lott had a few lots. There's a few lots on Chesterfield Street that I think council approved in the last 6 months to a year where some subdividing was happening, would be allowed. This has not been a problem, you know, on new subdivisions, new parcels, but this is just mainly those older sections. It will add a burden on to the homeowner, the homeowner, because the developer, the builder's going to have to pay to underground it, and they'll pass that on to the on the cost of the building.
But how much cheaper to do it then?
But the thing is, you know, that is what the regulations are. It was brought to our attention. We didn't feel it was right to go back on individuals that have already made progress on their or submitted plans, but in the future we're going to be notifying people that we will be expecting undergrounding unless council or someone else tells us not to do it differently. So
I just wondered if there were several developments that we could really encourage this on. We just did our wiring underground and it cost a lot, and I sure wish I'd done it years ago. And and I surely wish if we build our building new homes, because you know we talked about if we ever want to underground wiring downtown, the big expensive part is going to be getting it to the houses, I think.
And the time to do it would be, it's a whole lot less expensive to do it
when your yard's not there,
when you're starting off, than sometime later on.
Yeah, we had to dig under all kind of stuff. It was really a pain.
Plus the conversion from overhead to underground, someone's going to have to bear that cost. You know, we were talking about probably the city's going to have to bear a lot of that, but not all of it.
Well, I just wondered if there were some major things that really hadn't even been
started. I don't know of anything major that... there was probably about a half dozen pieces of property that... We try to relate for the last year or so, like, and we came up with, well, maybe three, four, five. That.
But if they don't have a building permit yet, you're saying, if they have to come in for a building permit, when they come for a building permit, right, they're going to be told that this wiring needs to be underground.
Okay.
If we approve a subdivision to create a lot or two, they're going to be grandfathered. That's where we think we ought to be.
Right.
Because we didn't raise any issue when they asked for it. And they asked to approve those new lots or create those new lots.
Okay.
And yeah, most of them, like the Park Avenue townhouses, was about a townhouse. That one was
already. That was already.
The new houses, yeah, the new houses on Chester, and that was even simple. The new houses on Charleston Street, they're being built. That's the one underground.
Oh, sure. Okay.
A couple others that are going underground. They're doing it. I think most of them would on their own.
Good.
And the, you know, what we will be doing in the future when something comes to City Council or comes to Ed that's going to need a change in zoning or subdivision, we'll put that as a condition on that so there's no question, and they, it's not going to be a surprise. We'd hate to do it now because it would be a surprise to some people.
Okay. Cecil and Carla, did y'all want to make any comments?
You guys are awesome.
Huh?
You guys are awesome.
Awesome. We're awesome. Hey, that's a good kind of comment to make. Cecil's got an announcement, I know, about Strom Thurmond.
Folks, I'd like to invite you, the families, and everyone here, to the event that we're having at Holman Gardens Thursday evening. You should get the meeting on. It's a concert called Salute to Strom Thurmond of the United States of America. Patriotic music. We plan to have start here, have a total of 6 concerts, for the last one in Washington, D.C. And I don't know whether you know the seats or not, Johnny Shoan, they're with a bunch of music, and it's just awesome. And love to have you come out. There's no charge. And it's really good. It's going to be extremely patriotic. Aiken High School band will be playing, Strom Thurmond's all in D.C. also be there. Please, I want to say it, it's a short window that opens this up. And 7 to 8 in Hopewood Gardens. And if you go late, it's off the back of the
program. Thursday night,
yes.
Will he be there?
Huh?
My son will be late.
I knew you had something to tell us. Okay.
One more thing. One of the songs is the Strom Thurmond that Miss Nancy has Mr. C to write for her. Another one's about Nancy Moore, their daughter, who passed away many years ago. It's also about Nancy Moore. Come if you can. I promise you won't.
Okay. We are adjourned. How about that?
Larry, I see you up here.